Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request, and you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace. Welcome, everybody, to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay, and this evening we are dealing with owning and operating your own business and networking at the same time. Our special guest is a gentleman. His name is Larry Williams. A business owner and a master networker, and he's the founder of the FTBS, which is an independent organization funded by members and sponsors who share its visions of advocating and empowering blacks and others seeking self-employment and professional networking. Today, FTBS reaches more than 7,500 business owners and entrepreneurs and community organizations daily with messages aimed at helping them grow their business one opportunity at a time. Larry Williams is the founder and chairman and CEO of First Thursday Biz in Seattle and First Thursday Jacksonville. He is responsible for leading an elite team of business professionals who help entrepreneurs and future entrepreneurs to successfully realize their dreams of economic prosperity. An extremely successful entrepreneur and a business management professional, Larry has a master's degree in business marketing, a bachelor's degree in journalism, and a Ph.D. in the Hard Knock Schools of Life business. He has skillfully guided many small and medium-sized businesses and nonprofits to success through his keen advertising, marketing, and business management excellence. He is considered by many as a genius when it comes to that niche. Target and diverse branding and marketing, he is creative and out-of-the-box business thinking, has helped many clients achieve and become the best in their industries with award-winning projects. Okay? This will be our special guest here this evening. I want everybody to take your time, sit back, make sure you got some pencil and paper so that we can get down to business here this evening and we can learn some things for Mr. Larry Williams, who is our special guest tonight. Okay? I'm going to open up the line and see if my special guest is available. Area code 904, first three numbers, 374. Are you with us?
Hey, hey, good evening. I guess it's that time of the evening where, and happy Saturday to you. Thanks for having me on. This is Larry Williams with First Thursday Biz and coming to you from Jacksonville, Florida. And, again, thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, no problem, brother. We're grateful to have such a distinguished guest with us, and I got a feeling we're going to learn some things here tonight. But before we get into the nuts and bolts and hard plans, tell us about yourself. Give us some background and what brought you to the point of getting into the business and stuff, and what's your past like?
Well, let me tell you, I was I grew up right down the road here in a little town called Waynesboro, Georgia, which is about 200 or so miles northwest of here, and attended college at Savannah State College, also attended at Seattle University, where I majored in journalism and had a minor in marketing. I also have a master's degree from Alameda University in Idaho, and I've been working on my doctorate for the past 12 years, but it's not something that I'm, looking to rush into. I have spent many years in Seattle. I spent the past 40 years in Seattle working in marketing, advertising, public relations, and business management. I've started the first African-American newspaper on the campus of Seattle University when I was in college because folks there didn't appreciate the fact that I was next in line for the to be the editor of the daily, the weekly newspaper there on campus, which was called the Chieftain at that time. So I started my own newspaper. I was also working full-time and putting myself through school, raising a family while I was in college at Seattle University, and that's where I met my wife, Francine, and we married at a young age, and we're still married. We've been married, we'll be married 43 years in September 15th, so that's one of the crown jewels of my life is being able to meet her, marry her. We have three adult daughters who are all in business themselves, at least working for Fortune 500 companies. I've advised them not to get into business until they're ready to make the sacrifices that it takes to be in business. Have four beautiful grandkids, two young men and two young ladies, and they're 12, 13, 14, and 22. So
okay.
I've had a full life. I also, after spending about 10 years working in the newspaper industry, where I started out as a reporter, back in 1971 and, moved up through the ranks and eventually switched from reporter to advertising sales because after seeing some of the salesmen's account executives' checks and looking at my reporter's checks, I figured I was on the wrong side of the business. So I switched sides and got over and got into advertising, and that was one of the best things I did because after about 5 years, I was the general manager, and in 7 years, I was the vice president, senior vice president of advertising and marketing for the newspaper. At that time, I felt that I had reached the height because the only other position available was the publisher, and the company that I was working for, the owner wasn't going anywhere, and he was the publisher. So I decided to start an advertising agency, so I started the first successful African American advertising agency in Seattle, Washington, in 1982, and we expanded. It was very successful. We went from zero buildings to over $1 million in less than 2 years. So it was very successful. But we kept doing that. We expanded down to California. We had clients such as Sears Roebuck. We had the Washington State Lottery. 7-Eleven stores, Pennzoil. So we had a great client list. Finally, after about 10, 11 years, we sold that agency to some friends of ours in California, because at that time our kids were getting into high school and getting ready for college. I wanted to spend some time with them. If you've ever been in business, you know that being in business is a 24-hour, 7-day a week and 365 days and sometimes 366 days a year opportunity that you have to fulfill. And I wasn't quite, hadn't spent that much time with my kids, so I decided, hey, this is a great time to do that. I was fortunate enough to have a good resume that when I decided to do that, I talked to a couple of my friends, and they created a position at the Seattle Urban League as a vice president for marketing and special events. I worked there for about 6 years, and after that decided that the kids were adult enough and most of them through college that we decided that it was time for me to get back into business. So I became the CEO of the largest African-American-owned communications company, Tilleben Publishing Company. We published 4 newspapers and had 4 radio stations. So I did that for another 8 years before retiring. And that was kind of a forced retirement because I became ill. And that's when the story gets really interesting, and, because at that point, I was in, went to the hospital for an appendectomy that I thought was an appendectomy. I was supposed to be in and out of the hospital, and after a few days, I started bleeding internally, and the doctors couldn't figure out what was going on. So, make a long story short, spent about 7 weeks in the hospital on my back. Lost most of my weight. I was like, I went in, I was weighing 180 pounds when I came out. Eventually when I came out, I was weighing on 100 pounds. But the good thing about it is that the doctors had, on the 6th week, the doctors gave up on me. They called my wife and my family and told me, at the most, Mr. Williams, we're sorry to tell you that you got about 24 hours to live. That was one of the most deafening things that I've ever heard in my life. I can't, you know, I don't know if anyone out there can imagine someone coming in and a team of doctors coming in and telling you and your wife that, you know, at most you had 24 hours to live. At first I thought they were kidding, you know, because I thought I was getting better, but I knew I wasn't because I wasn't feeling well. I wasn't gaining any of my weight back, and I was still bleeding internally. They could never figure it out. It was, and you know what, to this day they still haven't figured it out. But, you know, that's when God came in and entered my life. And on that 7th week, when the doctors gave up, you know, I didn't give up, but I was ready to go one way or the other. And I just asked God, and I told him, hey, I'm ready to do whatever you want to do with me. You let your will be done. If I have to stay here and suffer like this, then I don't want to live. I'd rather be either heaven or hell. It didn't matter at that point because, you know, the pain was excruciating. And, you know, I just didn't want to live like that anymore. But that night, God sent one of his angels to me and told me that not only that I was going to walk out of that hospital, that he was going to heal me. And I live by this now, and if anyone is a scripture person, they can go to 2 Kings in the 20th chapter, and that's what I live by. Because that's at that point, that's when Isaiah told Hezekiah that, you know, God had told him that he was going to die. And that's when Hezekiah said, asked God, say, hey, look, I've been a good man to you all my life. I made one mistake, and it's this time, please spare me. And as Isaiah was walking away, God came to him and told him to go back and tell him that, hey, you are going to live, and I'm going to give you 15 more years. I don't know how many more years God has given me, but he's given me today. And that's the only thing that I live by. And if you follow me on Facebook, on Twitter, or anywhere, you always see a hashtag that says pound 24 hours to live. So I live my life 24 hours at a time. I'm just blessed to have a wonderful, beautiful wife who stood by me through all these times, even the good when we were, you know, living and having the Mercedes and the house, of, you know, the large house by the lake. We've experienced all those things. We voided ourselves of all those things once after my experience and started dedicating our life to fulfilling the prophecy of God and my commitment to God that if I did live, that I would commit myself back to helping black folks and the areas that I had talent and expertise, and that's in marketing and business management. So we started First Thursday, and at that time it was First Thursday Seattle. It was myself, my wife, one of my longtime friends, who's Nate Miles, who's the vice president with Eli Lilly now. He was just a peon at that time. And another one of my friends, Kikora Dorsey, who was with the Casey Foundation, and Ashby Reed, who was working for Boeing Company at that time. And they encouraged me and told me that they would help in any way they could, but they also knew that my expertise in dealing with black businesses and having run black businesses and organizations would be a benefit for the community. But they really wanted me to go out and follow my passion and also follow my gift and relationship with God, which was helping black businesses. So that's when we started First Thursday back in 19. We started in 2002, and we started having meetings in 2004. And from that time, since this time, we've had meetings on the first Thursday of every month in Seattle. And beginning last November, we started having First Thursdays here in Jacksonville. We wanted a place on the East Coast where it was geographically feasible for us to go to different cities here. Jacksonville just happened to be a place that God sent us to continue this journey, and that's where we are. And that brings us up to today.
Well, fantastic, man. Well, let me ask you something. You briefly touched on First Thursday, but could you give us the basic mechanics of how First Thursday works and how it benefits?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things that we do, and as you know, First Thursday is an organization. First of all, we advocate for black businesses. That means that we go down and meet with organizations, government agencies, private sector business presidents, heads of these organizations and businesses, and advocate for black business. That means that we go in there and we put it on the line. You know, we want to make sure that black businesses are getting a fair share of the government dollars. But more importantly, we encourage these organizations, agencies to use black businesses, not only black businesses, but businesses of color and women-owned businesses. Now, part of that advocacy is bringing the heads of those organizations to meetings to meet with our black membership. And one of the things that we're really happy with is that since we've been in Jacksonville, we've been able to have the superintendent public schools at our meetings. We've been able to have the heads of JEA, JTA, and the city small and emerging businesses, as well as Jacksport, at our business at our meetings. And the thing there is that we want to be able to have them come to us. All of, you know, if you look at the struggle of black businesses, one of the major things, as you talk to black owners, is that they don't have a place at the table. Our advocacy creates that place at the table for them. We don't have a business per se. Our business is First Thursday. We run our organization to help black businesses. We don't compete with black businesses. We don't go out and say, okay, we're going to get this contract and then we're going to give you a piece of it. No, we go out and actually physically go out with the businesses if they need to. We help them, first of all, make sure that they're legal, that they're properly licensed and so forth, if they need business plans and anything like that, either we'll help them with them or we'll refer them to organizations that are in the city of Jacksonville or Seattle that does that, because that's a business in and of itself. Once that's done, then we'll happily go out with them. We go to these organizations and to the private sector, to the major construction companies that are looking to hire qualified minority and women-owned businesses, and we represent them. And when I say represent, we don't represent them in for a fee. We represent them as part of their membership. Our memberships are really inexpensive. They start at $100 a year, and they go up from there. The maximum that you have invested in a membership as a small business is $500 a year, and that includes everything that we do. They also, as part of that membership, become a member of our national I Like Black Business Network, which is a network of black-owned businesses, first of all in Seattle and Jacksonville, that we're expanding nationally, and we're in a major thrust of that right now. We launched that back in May of this year, May of 2014. We have some of the best technology people in the world working with us up in Seattle, and they create applications, websites, and anything else that our members need to help them become successful. One of the things that we learned through research is that, especially here in Jacksonville and Duval County, you know, we have over almost 10,000 black-owned businesses here. People don't know that. But the sad thing about it is that out of those 10,000 black businesses, only 67% are profitable. Only 33% are profitable. 67% are making less than $50,000 a year. I always tell folks that are going into business, you know, be careful what you ask for because you just might get it. You know, in my experience, and, you know, I'm not being boastful or anything, but I can make $50,000 a year selling shoes or suits somewhere. That's not a lot of money. And for you to spend 24 hours a day and 7 days a week trying to make $50,000, even though you're a business owner, that's probably not the ideal situation for you. You know, one of the things that we find also is that when we go into business, we don't have a business plan, you know, and those that do have a business plan don't follow it. I always believe and have been successful in planning my work and working my plan. So those are the type of things that we do, but that's just part of the advocacy. The other thing is the empowerment. That's what we do as far as when I go back and when we talk in our meetings. And a lot of folks can't deal with this, but it doesn't matter to me because I'm on a spiritual journey here. So we start our meetings with prayer, and we end it with prayer. I say that we do that because if you want to be successful, you have to have something. You have to have faith in that business. And sometimes we need to draw from something other than our own faith. And that's why we always say, hey, feel your spirit. Have a spiritual connection with something. My spiritual relationship is with God. Other people can have a spiritual relationship with whomever or whatever they want, as long as they have something that they believe in and that will pull them through the tough times, those days and nights when times are tough. You know, when you don't get a contract that you expected, when the bills are due and you don't have any money to pay those bills, when your payroll is due and you don't have that payroll, you know, you need something to pull you through those times. But most of the time, if you plan your business and you plan your work and work your plan, you're going to have those resources available. The third thing is the networking. We're really, really excellent at networking. That's why we meet the first Thursday of each month, because it gives an opportunity for all of our businesses to come in and meet with each other. That way we can share our successes and we can share our failures. Surely if you're going to have a business, if you've ever been in business, you've had some failures. I've had mine, and you're going to have yours. If you're not failing, you're not being successful. I don't care who starts what type of business or how great it is. I've very seldom seen anyone start a business without experiencing some type of failure along the way. Fortunately, over the 40 plus years that we've been in, our successes have been greater than the failures. But you know what? Each time we have a failure, we just get right back up on that horse and try it again. As I like to tell people, this isn't the first time we've been to this rodeo, and it won't be the last.
Well, but let me ask you this now. Now, is what I was trying to figure out, I haven't gotten a whole lot of time to do an investigation on it. You have First Thursday Jacksonville, And if I'm not mistaken, you have First Thursday Seattle. Are you doing pretty much the same thing in both locations?
Absolutely. One of the things that we do, and when we started expanding and decided that we're going to go to other cities, and what we wanted to do is be like McDonald's. So when you go to First Thursday in Seattle and you go to First Thursday in Jacksonville, you had the same experience. One of the most successful companies in the world started in Seattle, and that's Starbucks Coffee Company. That's another one of the companies that we try to model after. I like to model after success. You know, I don't want to start an organization, and, you know, it's nothing against these organizations, but I don't want to be another NAACP or Urban League. I want to be a First Thursday. I want to be a Starbucks. I want to be a McDonald's, so that, you know, wherever we go, whatever we do, whenever city we're going to be in, that's what we're going to have. Our expansion to Jacksonville was on purpose. It wasn't something that was just nilly-willy. We spent over 2 years exploring cities and traveling to different cities, deciding where we wanted to go and where we wanted to be for, you know, the future of on the East Coast. As chances are is that as technology has improved and our technicians have gotten better with the Internet and using online scenarios, we may not have another physical brick-and-mortar location to do this with, but maybe simply going online. And those are things that I'm not talking about right now, but those are the things that we're looking at. But, yes, we meet in Seattle. We meet in Jacksonville first because there's a three-hour time difference between the two cities. So I'll be here in Jacksonville, and then 3 hours later we'll be live in Seattle via Skype or some other means of networking.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Now, I'm coming to First Thursday. I'm coming there. And when I come in there, what am I to expect when I get there?
Well, and I'll just give you this. When you walk in the door, you're going to sign in. Everyone's going to be greeted. Again, we have a planned program, and it's the same program each and every month, except for the only thing changes are the presenters. This coming Thursday on September the 4th at noon at the Jacksonville Urban League, we're going to have one of our members there who's going to talk about his success. This is a young man who started a barbershop out here in the south end of Jacksonville a few years ago. And he has since that time expanded. He has two shops now, one in the Mayport area and one on the south side, on Southside Boulevard. And he's also started a beauty salon. So these are the type of folks, these are the type of business people that we like to promote. These are the people that are being successful. And these are black folks and women-owned businesses. These are the type of opportunities we want. Some, in addition to bringing in the heads of these organizations that have potential contracts for us, we need to highlight our own people. We need to show success and let them tell us how they have become successful, not just listening to somebody else. You can only be successful if you model after success, and that's one of the young man that's going to come. His name is Lamont Foy, and he runs the Platinum Cuts Barber and Beauty Shops. So I think it's going to be a good meeting. Usually we have also in the third Thursday, the third week of each month, we have members-only meetings where we bring in a special guest speaker who might be the president of JTA or the president of Auburn and White or any other major company here that decide that our members need to hear about how they became successful as a president and CEO of a major company or of a major organization. So those are the type of things. Once you come into the meetings, we start with prayer, and we go into the actual meeting. Each individual at the meeting gets an opportunity, what we call the elevator, 30-second elevator speech. They get a chance to get up in the meeting, speak about what they do, why they started their business, and we try to keep it at 30 seconds. 30 seconds is the key, because that's the length of time between elevator stops. If you ever been on an elevator between floors, it takes 30 seconds. And I like to use the phrase, and it's happened to me once, you never know who you're going to be on the elevator with, and you want to pitch your business, okay? So you have a canned elevator speech. I was on, if you're on the elevator with President Obama and you want to tell him about your business, what would you say? And that you need to be able to have that canned. You may be in the elevator with Bill Gates from Microsoft, and he asks you, what do you do? You need to have that already prepared and be able to articulate that in 30 seconds or less. Now, obviously, 30 seconds is a short period of time, so we give them a little bit of time. But, the key thing is that they're able to do it, and we practice that. Those are things, that's why we have them do it at the meeting, and everyone at the meeting does it, whether you have a business or not. Our meetings are free. They're open to the public, and we invite everyone and anyone, whether you're thinking about starting a business, you have a business, or you're working with a major company or just working with a small business. We have something for everybody because in those meetings you have a chance to talk to one another. People like to know that what successes you're using in your marketing, in your advertising, in your public relations, or just in general. We may be sharing the same type of business. We may be able to connect and share on purchasing goods and products. I mean, if you have a barbershop, maybe we can go to the supplier and buy in bulk. These are the type of things we talk about in our meetings. These are the things that we talk about. These are the things that make other folks that are non-black successful. We need to mimic those things and mirror those type of things. Success breeds success, and that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. Well, now, if I was someone who's just, I don't have a product, I don't have a business, but it is my desire, heartfelt desire, to open my own business, what would be the first thing that you would tell me that I would have to do?
The first thing I would do is say do some research on the type of business you want to start. Oftentimes, we go into business based on what we're doing, and that's not necessarily what you want to do. I always believe that you find something that you're passionate about, and one thing I believe is that if you're passionate about something, you're going to be more apt to be successful at it than doing something because you want to make money at it. I've never started a business just because I wanted to make money. And a lot of people can't understand that, and I'll tell you why. Because as I've run businesses over the years, and not just my own, but I've always stayed in my field. And a lot of folks call it staying in your lane. I've always been in marketing, advertising, and public relations. Those things that under that umbrella, I've run newspapers and worked with radio stations. I've worked with advertising agencies. I've worked but most of my life and career has been in the newspaper print and broadcast industry. So I stay in my lane, but those are things I've always been passionate about. I told you at the start of this, I started the first black newspaper on campus at Seattle University. So I've always been, ink has always been in my blood, so I stay in that area. I love it. And anytime that you love something and you're passionate about it, you're going to be good at it. So I tell people, find something that you're passionate about and go for it. Don't start a business to try to make money. Start a business because you like doing something, because you're going to be more successful than you are trying to start a business just to make money. Now, obviously, if you're going to be successful in your passion, then money follows it along the way.
Okay. Well, I have to agree with you on that. You got to find something that you really love doing, whether you get paid or not. And
that's right.
If you got that, you're gonna make it. My passion is educating my people, and I finally got a soapbox here where I can teach them something.
One thing I always tell people: don't be afraid to follow that passion. It may not be something. As a matter of fact, that's why when you read my bio there, it says out of the box thinking, outside the box thinking, because since I've been here in Jacksonville, I've work with a few people here, and they folks come to me and they'll say, I like cars. Maybe I ought to work at a car dealership or something like that. I say, why do you want to work at a car dealership? Go buy, start your dealership. Start your own. It can be done. Mm-hmm. Learn about it, research it, find what you need to do to make it happen, and go do it. Some folks have said that they wanted to be a news reporter. I said, well, you want to do it, be a news reporter, you want to report something, go start your own, buy a radio station, buy a TV station. These are the type of things, buy a newspaper, you know, or start one. You know, you don't, everything that is there doesn't have to be something that already exists. You can create it yourself. You know, matter of fact, most of the things, and that's why when I mentioned earlier about other organizations that had recruited me to come and join them, you know, it wasn't my passion to do that. My passion is to help our people and also to follow my commitment that I made to God. So I'm following that, and I'm also having the best time of my life helping black businesses and become prosperous. Now, prosperity doesn't mean that you're going to be rich. Prosperity means that you're going to be taken care of, and you can take care of your family. That's prosperity to me. Now, to other folks, mm-hmm. they want to say, well, I'm not going to be happy unless I'm making a lot of money. Well, if you can make a lot, I have friends that make a lot of money working for other people. As a matter of fact, the people that are working for other people making more money than most people I know that have their own business. So, you know, you have to make a decision what you really want to do.
You're absolutely right about that. And I think that for one thing I know is that people who are in business, you got to take your business seriously. And you got to be willing to put in the work to make this a reality. And whatever it takes, and once you get it up off the ground, you're still going to have to maintain what you got. That's my strategy in dealing with
You're absolutely
business.
Right. You're absolutely right. And we tell people in our meetings, and, you know, I can't go into everything that we do, but, you know, part of the things, some of the things that we talk about is that if you're going to come and be a member first, we don't just take anybody. That's the main thing. You know, we want people who are serious, you know, serious. This is serious people. This is serious business for serious people. You know, people that want to play business, you know, we don't have time for that. I'm not going to say just because you want to become a member that, okay, fine, come on in and we're going to work with you. We don't have time to be playing. You know, if you want to play, go somewhere else. You know, if you're serious and you want to be successful and you want to be prosperous, yeah, come and join us because we need more people. We need more black businesses. You know, we need more successful black businesses. Some of the things that we did in Seattle that folks are always and continuing to talk about now that we deal with is starting to group businesses. We had a group of contractors who were going down to the city of Seattle in King County, which is like Duval County here, each one of them going down trying to get little $25,000 and $100,000 contracts, and they were competing with one another. So we said, hey, look, let's group us together. Let's get 10 or 20 businesses that have different skills and talents and abilities that they offer. Let's group together. We can combine our resources. We can get bonded. We can get insurance as a group. And then we select a general contractor out of this group. The success of that has been enormous. You know, now we can go in as a group and we have, you know, we had a carpenter, we had a dump truck driver, we had electricians, we had the plumbers, but all of these are independent businessmen who've joined together to form a group. But they subjugated their egos to be able to do this. This isn't something, that's why I said we're serious people. If you want to make money in this area and you want to be successful, sometimes you have to let the ego go. And that's one of the things that we teach also. Let the ego go. What are you in business for if it's not to be successful? You know, if you want to just have your name on something, you know, hang your name, get a shingle and hang it up on the corner somewhere. That gives you the notoriety that you want. If you want your 15 minutes of fame or you want to be successful, that's what we always talk about.
Okay, that's fantastic, Larry. Now, what about advertisement? What kind of priority should we put on that, and how should we go at that?
It should be the number one priority that you have. One of the things that we talk about all the time is that people always want to put advertising last, and they say, "Well, I can't afford to advertise," and I tell them, "Well, you can not afford to advertise. If you want to get your business out, you want to get the word out about your business, you need to advertise." One of the programs that we're working on now, and one of our partners in this deal, is the I Like Black Business concept. And this is what we're putting together. This is going to be something that's going to be unheard of, and for black businesses that, you know, again, taking that same concept that I was talking about with the contractors in Seattle. We're going to do the same thing here, but we also want to take this to another level. Nowadays, people that are buying, that the purchasing power, do you know that the purchasing power of the black community is over $1 trillion now, but we're only spending $1 of it in the black community with our own businesses? That's a shame for everyone. You know, other groups, other ethnicities are turning their dollars over 5 to 10 times in their communities, and we're only doing it once, and that's when we get our check, and then we go somewhere else to spend it. I cannot understand why people think that the white man's ice is colder than mine. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. So advertising, right, and using the Internet, we got social media out here. You're doing a great job at it. You know, you need to be on Facebook. You need to be using Twitter, LinkedIn, all these type of things, but you have to have a website, too, to send people to. I mean, a lot of things that we're doing, a lot of the type of businesses that we have, you know, if we just had a web presence, 67% of our businesses don't even have a web presence. And the ones that do, they're outdated. What is that? We're missing a lot of money. Each like on a Facebook, if you have a business and you're running it through there, is worth $167.
Well,
not me talking. This is all. If you go to come to our meetings, we have all this. This is a factual deal. And I Like Business concept, we've done the research on it. And people are the ones, our members now, are starting to utilize that. They're starting to learn that, you know, you can have a website that's going to make your business prosperous. You know, you don't have to go out there and spend enormous amounts of money advertising on with the newspaper and radio, because most people aren't using those mediums anymore. They're using the Internet, and you back that up with newspaper and radio so that you don't miss any part of the market. But you have to be diligent and vigilant about what you do. You have to understand advertising. You have to understand that you need a good, clean logo. There are a lot of things that we work with people on, especially our members, and helping them achieve those things that they need to be successful, and advertising is the key.
Well, you're right about that. I was quite fortunate. I took invested, I think it was $950 in marketing education, and I learned from some very, very high-powered guys, and I learned how to build my own websites, how to market, how to drive traffic to the site, and this is what I do on a regular basis, and I take the same concepts and principles to place the educational information in front of people so that they can get this and go on. But you are absolutely correct, Larry.
Well, you know, and again, this is nothing I don't brag and I don't boast, but I tell you, I have spent 40 years in perfecting what I'm doing, and it's not by coincidence that I'm here in Jacksonville again. You know, I'm here to help people. I'm here to help black businesses try to be successful. I figured, and my wife and I talk about this all the time, we figured that if we just help one business become successful, we've achieved our goal. The chances of that happening, just helping one, it's already happened. So we're going to help many black businesses here, and that's what we're here for. But, you know, one thing that I'll never do is I'll never force what we're trying to do on anyone. If people can't see the value in it, you know, we're going to be here. So regardless of a lot of folks don't want to see us succeed, but that's neither here nor there. My vision and our vision is already set. I know that we're going to be successful here. We wouldn't have come here if we weren't going to be successful. But the bottom line is that I want to make sure that we help other people become successful. That's what it's all about. If we can all help each other up the rung of success, then we're going to be successful. We need to get out of the crab barrel theory of, okay, I don't like such and such, so I'm not going to support his business. That's stupid. You know, excuse my French, but that is. I mean, you know, you need to be helping each other, not hurting each other. If I can't help you, I'm going to leave you alone. I'm not going to hurt you.
You understand. Now, Larry, let me make sure I got this right. Now, you are based in Jacksonville. Y'all do a lot of work here and helping people here. And you also have a base there in Seattle, Washington. But my understanding, because you said some key stuff, is they don't have to be in Seattle or in Jacksonville.
That's correct.
You can still reach them in all 50 states because you have the Internet and you have an international concept that you are promoting for aid for all people. Across
that's
the United
States. And you know what? And I'm happy you mentioned that, too, because, you know, we have people and you know, we've been very blessed, and I'll just tell you that, but because we have a lot of friends that we made over these 40 years, and I still have people that started, when I started back in 1972 at the newspaper, I still have people and friends that I've worked with, that I learned from, that mentored me, and people that I've mentored over the years that have gone on to be successful. So we work with people all over the United States. We have people in Baltimore. We have people in Washington, D.C. We have in Atlanta and Augusta, Georgia, in Portland, Oregon, and California. I mean, you know, we have a big audience out there, and we hear from people from New York, Cincinnati, all these people that have heard about First Thursday and wanting us to come and put a First Thursday in their particular city. But, you know, we're also very aware of the vulnerabilities of overexpansion too soon. And we've also come to the conclusion that we can expand without having to have that foot on the ground in those particular cities. We are going to, as we expand now, we're going to have the go-to meeting type of scenarios where people can tune into our meetings online. And it makes it a lot better for a lot of folks who can't get up out of their office or can do it better from their location online from noon until 1 o'clock. That's the length of time that we meet once a month. And then one evening, the members-only meeting. And those are the key meetings. Those are when we really break out the bread and butter. What we like, and our people in Seattle and Jacksonville understand that the meet and greet, the B2B business-to-business networking, those are just the appetizers. If you really want the entree, you have to be a member participate in our members-only meetings. And I'm not saying that for members, because we're going to get members. We have members. I'm not worried about that. But I do tell folks that if you really want to get the meat of it, become a member. You know, people always want things for free. And I know through experience that anything that's free, that's free, is probably not worth having.
Okay. I try to get my people to understand the free thing versus the investment. And
That's the key right there, brother. Investment. Invest in your business, whether it's with First Thursday or some other organization that can help you, or just invest in yourself. Investment is make sure you get a return on that investment. Some of the things we talk about also is in working with these businesses, our members, is that, you know, don't go out just bidding on contracts to get a big contract. We had some people in Seattle that were bidding on contracts that were $1 million contract, okay? They got the contract, worked the heck out of themselves, and then at the end of the contract they figured out, you know what, I only made 2% off of this deal, and some of them didn't even barely broke even. I said, always do your homework. Get you an accountant. If you're talking about that type of money, get you an accountant, somebody who can help you with your back room and make sure that your physical, not P-H-Y, but F-I-S, is taken care of. Because, you know, when you most, if you're successful, you need to be making at least 12% on your contracts. You know, 2% is not going to do it. Now people say, well, 2% of $1 million is a lot of money. No, but you got payroll and everything else to come out of that. You haven't made that. That's just your profit before, you know, payroll and all the other expenses you got to put out. So, you know, you're not doing that. People need to understand. Getting a huge contract from the city of Jacksonville is not going to make you successful. Getting a huge contract from, Walmart may not be successful. But you have, if you sit down and put your pencil to the paper and do it the right way, then you can be successful because you won't go bidding on things that you can't make a profit out of.
Fantastic. You're absolutely correct. I think what we fail at a lot of times is in the research. And there's an old saying, you don't have to be smart. Just be smart enough to go and get some people that's smarter than you.
There you go.
But make sure that you make sure that you got something that you can work with. Now, if you Larry, to be honest with you, now I had a opportunity one time that was thrown in my lap, but I don't think the timing was right.
Right.
I decided to open a series of businesses. I put it on paper. I spent day and night writing this stuff out. I made sure the words were spelled correctly. I went through a ton of paper. But I took it to a guy that I had met at the National Association. It was like a water purifiers. And I was introduced to this little guy, and he looked at it. He said, I want you to come to my office. And he sat down, he said, did you create this? I said, yeah, I created it. He said, I'm very, very impressed. He said, I tell you what I want you to do. He said, I'm going to take this here, and I'm going to make this successful for you, and I need you to do something for me in exchange. He says, it's not going to cost you anything. He says, I'm going to give you an office. We was at the top floor of the New Prudential Building. He said, I'm going to give you your own office.
Yeah, right.
And I'll show you what we need to do. The only thing I want you to do is talk on the phone and get to bring the people in. We have a closing team. And so I had my own offices. Next thing I know, in less than 24 hours, I was a corporate executive. And I didn't know anything about that, but the guy had put me up in there. And I was rolling. So I've been there. It doesn't take a whole lot. All it takes is, first of all, you got to have some intestinal fortitude. That's guts enough to think that you can take what you got, what you believe in, and what you know that you can take and make something work on behalf of yourself, your family, and your people, and give it a shot, because don't nothing beat a failure but a try. So you
absolutely
are correct.
Yeah, and, you know, I've had many opportunities like that, and some of them I've taken, but most of them I haven't. But, you know, I don't ever try to portray that I'm the smartest pencil in the sharpest pencil in the pack, okay? But I do know one thing, that I'm a good people person, and I know that I'm just as comfortable in the boardroom as I am over there on the north side of Jacksonville if I have to be. So I can deal in multicultural markets. I can deal with wealthy folks, and I can deal with poor people. One of the things that we always say is that we'll never turn a business person down if they really are passionate about it because of their lack of funding or lack of money to purchase a membership. I'll never do that. All that thing that we ask is that if we help you, then you're going to turn around and help somebody else, because, you know, everyone needs a break and everyone needs a chance. Everyone needs an opportunity. And sometimes it's just that one person that's sitting out there that is so passionate about what they're doing, and all they're needing is a break. And those are the people that we love to help, and those are the people that we've been very successful in helping over the years, because once you've helped them, they come back and you benefit from it tenfold.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and those are principles that come out of the ancient records, what we're calling the Bible, and that comes straight out of there. Cast your bread upon the water, and it'll come back.
Yes, sir. And a lot of things that you hear from me is always out of the scriptures, but, you know, I don't pound that on people because, a lot of people can't understand and relate to where we're coming from. But the people that do, Those are the people that we love to work with, because they'll be the people that are going to be successful, and they're going to go to, those are the people that will go to bat for you when others won't. We have folks now that have been a member of First Thursday for 10 years up in Seattle, and each one, each and every one of them will lay down their business to help anybody else that, that wants to go in business, as long as they have the same principles and prescribe to the same teachings that we do, because they know that that's a recipe for success. And ones that don't, we have a lot of false prophets come through. A lot of people come in. You know what gets me, though, is that a lot of people come in and they think that we're naive and we just started this thing. But I tell you, you know, I don't judge people and I don't prejudge people. I let people eliminate themselves from success or failure. And most of the time, and you know this yourself, that they will.
Oh yeah, you don't have to mess with them, because genuine people and the people that's going to stay and not fall victim are the people who are genuinely interested and really believe in what they're doing.
But
ones who are coming under the false facade, and I want to help somebody, but the only primary objective that they have is just filling their pocket with debt notes.
They don't last. No, they don't last. But you know what? A lot of my longtime members, they, you know, sometimes they get upset with us because we take in people that you know, and you know, I, honestly, when I see them and hear them the first time, it doesn't take me 3 minutes to figure out most people. But you know what? I still won't turn them down, because I know that they'll weed themselves out. I just don't invest a lot of time with them, but I'll do anything I can to help anybody that comes and asks me.
Okay. Well, we're coming down to the bottom of the first hour, and I would like to extend an invitation for people that's listening to us here this evening. If you have a question for our guest, Larry Williams, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can get in and you can ask your question. The number to dial into this broadcast is 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. And raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can say what you got to say. And everybody in America will be listening to you. So if you got a question for our guest, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can get in. Now, let me ask you this, Larry. Could you, for the listening audience, could you give us, well, hold on. Before we get to that, we got to call it with the hand raised. Let me open it up.
Okay.
Area code 678. Tell us who you are. What's your question? Okay, their line is dropped. They'll be calling right back in a minute. But now, can you... okay, here they go. We got another one. Okay. Area code 404. Tell me who you are. What's your question for our guest? 404. Come on in. Your phone breaking up now.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. If you're on the speakerphone, cut it off. Okay, it seems like you're still breaking up. Give it a shot. What's your question?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Oh, hi, greetings. It's honors to you, Tahaka. Hi, Mr. Williams. We may be related because my father is out of Alabama. Bill Williams, well.
Hi, how you doing? Happy Saturday evening to you.
I want to know, I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and I called Tahaka today, and I was listening to him that I am in the financial business as well, background in marketing as well, and that I was looking to help our people with financing, setting them up with their own banks where they will no longer need to walk in the bank and get denied, and also credit restoration for our people, where we have a program where you get 7 services, including credit restoration, for $87 a month. And once we get the business owner scores or people looking for new businesses to set up, they don't even need a lot of money to get started. or to get business funding, and he told me today that you was going to be on his show, and we're looking for like 1,000 business owners or people that are looking to start their own businesses across the country to empower. I'm a part of a millionaire circle. The guy that sponsored me is making $250,000 a month. The guy that brought him in is making way, way more. I mean, his children, one of the brothers' children are 9, 13, and 15. They had black cards with millions of dollars on their cards because daddy taught his children how to understand the banking and the finance system in America, in the world, actually. So I'm a part of that network, and I'm really excited and honored to meet you and would love to come to Jacksonville when I come to visit Tahawka again, to be a part of your network where I can help out people on the public side to understand finance, because I'm an educator, and I educate in finance as well as health and wellness. So my passion is health, and my passion is wealth, and helping out people to understand that it's a process to regain your health. It starts with detoxification. To regain or to get you to wealth creation, you have to understand finance. You have to understand business. And we are looking for 1,000 entrepreneurs to work with across the country for 3 years, because the first couple of years, as you know, 95% of the businesses in this country go under in 2 years. So we're looking to work with them for 3 years to teach them what credit is, how to understand the scoring system, how to understand debt ratio. I mean, just the program is off the chain, and it's changing people's lives. And I wouldn't be a part of it if it wasn't something that I didn't believe in. If it wasn't the best out there, I did the research on all the other companies. It's nowhere that you're getting LifeLock and LockBox and credit debt acceleration and debt zero and credit restoration for $87 a month. It's not now.
Well, it sounds like an interesting concept. I've always, my thing is that whatever your passion is, you follow it and do it to the best of your ability. I'd love to meet with you and hear more about what you do and how you do it. We work with many bank and financial institutions, both here in Seattle and also here in Jacksonville and in Seattle, and throughout the United States. And we also have some businesses that we're working with over in Nairobi. So, you know, we're not just national, but we're trying to be international. We're trying to find opportunities to help folks. And I'm not one that's saying that, you know, we're going to try to create millionaires or billionaires and all that type of thing. All we want to do is help people become prosperous. And if that means that they become millionaires or billionaires, then so be it. But if you're passionate about what you're doing, and it sounds like you are, and it sounds like you've had some success in doing that, I encourage you to continue. I encourage you to become a part of First Thursday. Tanaka said, is that you don't have to be in Jacksonville or Seattle to participate with us. You can go online and participate. One of the things that we're building is a national network that's online, and you'll start seeing it and you'll start feeling it in the next few months, because at the if I can put a shameless plug in here, Tanaka, is that we're going to be participating in the Black Expo here in October, and I'll guarantee you when you come to our booth, you're going to see one of the most fascinating booths that's ever been at the Black Expo, because it's going to be an interactive booth. It's going to have the First Thursday where you'll be able to just come there, run your tablet over, and it'll interact with you. It'll talk to you about the I Like Black Business Network, and it'll teach you how to come on. And if you go to our website in Jacksonville, it's www.firstthursdayjacksonville.org, and you'll see some of the information there about and how to participate with us online. This network, we've already had, and as I spoke earlier, we have folks that are connecting with us throughout the United States, New York, Los Angeles, Portland, all over. They've already signed up to do this, and they're encouraging their businesses to become a part of that network. We need to help each other. We need to support our own businesses. We need to be in a position that if I'm supporting your business, you support my business, and then we support Tanaka's business. We need to be interacting with each other. We need to network. And networking, again, is the most important thing that you can do as a group of businesses, not just individually trying to put money in my pocket, but putting money in everybody's pocket.
Would I be able to offer you an invite to Atlanta, to one of the entrepreneurship centers that I'm a part of, where I do lectures and I teach people about business finance education?
I'd be willing to go anywhere, almost any time, okay, as long as it fits within my schedule. You know, one thing I always try to be cautious and aware of is that, you know, I'm running two organizations in two different cities, and it's a lot more than I anticipated. But at the same time, you see me here, and I'm on the air talking with this brother here because I think and I believe in what he's doing, and I'll do anything I can to help his business, just like your business. I'm not going to say that when I come to Atlanta that I'll be joining up or becoming a part of anything, but I will be willing to listen to whatever you have to propose, and perhaps that we can form a partnership where we can help each other's business.
I would like to form a partnership with, you know, like-minded people that's looking to come to Atlanta, since I live here and there's so many businesses here. And
sure,
the service that you provide is what now? Advertising?
Well, our thing is a holistic approach to business, and we do marketing, advertising, public relations, but our major thing is networking, and again,
okay,
being online. If you go to, the first thing I would suggest is just go to our website and check it out, because I think it gives you a better idea and a concept about what we're doing. But the things that we're going to do are to create a national network of black businesses. And when I say a national network, that means that your business in Atlanta can be online with Tanaka's business, it can be online with our business, it can be online with the Joe's Fish Shop down the road. But when I go travel to different places, one of the things that I find, and the reason that we wanted to do this network, and this network will also have entertainment features on it, so that when we go to different cities, I travel a lot, and my wife and I travel a lot. So when we go to different cities, I need some place that can cut black people hair. You know, my wife needs to go someplace to get her hair done. We need to go someplace that serve the type of food that we want, that sell the type of clothes that we want, and a place that where we can stay, you know, near our cultural events and those type of things. And what's going on in the city, you know, is Jay-Z or Beyonce going to be there so that we can have some entertainment while we're there? These are the type of things that we need to do on this national network of black businesses, so that everyone going any place can function when they get to a city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds fantastic.
So if your business is one of those type of businesses that you want people to participate in when they come to Atlanta, put it on the First Thursday Network. You get an opportunity on that network. You get an opportunity to do your elevator speech, where you can talk about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how they can get in contact with you. That reaches all those businesses in that network. We hope to have over 100,000 businesses on that network by the end of next year.
Okay, and I'm looking on the website, and to get in, the basic membership is $50. That's just the directory. Okay.
That's the directory. The membership is $100. The annual membership is $100. The directory is only $50. That's just that gets you into the directory. That's not a membership. Now, I have to caution people. That's not a membership. That's a directory listing. And as we grow that, if you're on that web page, you'll see a deal there with the handyman. That's one of our first deals up there. If you click that on, you'll see how the business directory is going to work beginning next month. So, but we had to put something up there, and then you'll see the other businesses. They'll start popping up there over the next few days and the next between now and our meeting in September, because we have a backlog right now. But we had a lot of things that we had to do over the summer to perfect the apps that we're attaching to that.
Okay, the next meeting will be in September.
It'll be September 4th. We always meet the first Thursday of every month, for those of you that are listening. It's the first Thursday of every month, therefore the name First Thursday. Again, we tried to build a lot of things into this. We chose First Thursday because most people are familiar with First Friday, and people, at least I was, and people in Seattle, where it was an opportunity for us to go out. And it was called networking, but it was socializing. You know, it was, call it what it is. And at that time, you know, it was, and I was a partier back then. I'm not so much so now. But we used to go there and we exchange business cards, never see each other again. But we exchange business cards and then we'd have drinks and party and, you know, do the boogie or whatever we were doing. And then we'd go home and then that was it. So first Thursday, we said, okay, the first Thursday of the month. Number one is Thursday, so the next day is Friday. People are winding their week down. It's the first of the month, so people are planning, you know, for the rest of the month, but they also have learned from what they didn't want to do or weren't successful in doing the previous month. So we're going to X all of that out. So first Thursday, it's a great opportunity. But we come to our meetings, and as I said, we meet at noon during the lunch hour because we're serious people. We're not talking about dancing and partying. We're talking about business. And the only time that people have good business sense is when they're sober and in a sober mind, and they can think and focus on doing business. And that's why we say first Thursday of each month, we meet at the Jacksonville Urban League in Jacksonville, and we meet at the Boys and Girls Club in Seattle. We meet at the Boys and Girls Club because the people that come to our meetings are professional business people, and we want a role model. We meet in one of the poorest areas of Seattle at this Boys and Girls Club. But these kids love to see us coming in there in our shirts and ties and so forth because that's probably the only time that they see black people dressed, professional black people coming in doing professional things in a business manner, and they love it.
Yes.
Well, Mecca, you're going
to be coming to
Jacksonville, Florida, and we may get a chance to go on. We can time it when you come down here to Florida. First Thursday.
Even if she doesn't come during a meeting time, you know, I'd be happy to sit down anytime that she's down here, and we can chat and have a small meeting there, because our members love to meet with people from other places and have an opportunity to interact with people who are doing great things in their cities.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to building a relationship with you.
I look forward to it as well. And, again, spread the word about First Thursday. It's catching on.
Yeah, well, I have a couple of Facebook pages, 5,000 members, so I'll definitely promote you.
Okay, and we have one also, so, you know, just look me up at W. Larry Williams on Facebook, and then you'll find my other pages from there.
Okay.
And friend me.
Okay.
I'll accept. I'd love to keep up with you.
Okay, Sister Mecca, you're going to request from Sister Mecca, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, you have a blessed day.
You too, sir.
All right, thank you for coming on. Okay, now, Larry, let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
How critical is it for us as people of African descent today to own our own business opposed to working for somebody else?
Well, I think it's very critical, and you know, I grew up in the days back in the 50s and 60s, and during that time, you know, people don't understand it, but black people just own their own businesses, and they were successful in owning the business that they own all over the country, all over the United States, and not just in where I'm from in Georgia, but all over. I mean, Jacksonville had a very strong black business community, and I believe St. Augustine and Fort Lauderdale and others where there was a predominant black population, that those businesses were successful. But the reason they were successful is, and people that know their history understand that the reason that they were successful is because they were supporting each other's business. When I grew up, my grandfather had a wood company, and he didn't know it was a wood company. He called it a woodshed. But everybody in town bought wood from him. They didn't go to the white man to buy wood. They bought wood from Mr. Willie, you know. And Mr. Willie had, you know, and Mr. Willie couldn't read and write, but he could keep numbers. And I guarantee you, he knew everybody who owed him, and then when it was time to, as they used to say, settle up at the end of the week, he knew who owed him, and they came and paid him on time. It wasn't, I mean, he extended credit. Most people paid cash. So it was they were supporting each other. They had an ice house on the other side of town over across the railroad tracks. So when we needed ice, we'd go over to across the railroad track. We didn't go, we stayed on this side of the railroad track. We didn't go across the railroad track to get ice. We wanted to get ice from people like that looked like us so we could support our own businesses. You know, we had our own dry cleaners and barbershops, and I used to sell peanuts as a little boy in the barbershop while other guys was in there shining, getting their shoes shined. But all of these people were black-owned businesses. They weren't millionaires or billionaires. Maybe some of them did, but we had our own insurance company. We had our own banks. These are the things that I'm talking about. It's important for us to go back to that if we want to have a community that's successful. If you have a strong business community, you're going to have a strong community, period. You're going to have better schools because you pay taxes. You know, you won't have the police shooting us down in the street because we'll have people that police in our areas that look like us. So these are the type of things that we do. It's very important for us to establish black businesses and black business community.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Now, in your opinion, based on what you know, what do you think happened to change that?
Desegregation.
Okay.
A lot of people don't like to hear that, but desegregation was, I think, in my humble opinion, the worst thing that happened to black folks. I think when we desegregated, separated, and that's when our businesses start going astray. That's when we start getting poor education, because I grew up I went to all black schools all my life until I went up to Seattle in elementary, high school, and in college at Savannah State. It was all black, and we had some of the teachers that taught us were passionate about teaching, and they were passionate about teaching us our history. You know, so we learn things that other kids and our kids aren't learning in the schools now because they don't teach black history. You know, one of the things I said earlier, if you know your history, you know your greatness, right? So we don't know
That's
our
right.
greatness, and our kids don't know our greatness because they don't know our history. They're not taught it. So I go back to 1970. I graduated from high school in 1970, and in Georgia, that was the last segregated class to graduate in Georgia. And from then on, you can go back. And sure, you know, we were able to attend schools and with the white kids. Well, the folks after us were able to attend schools with the white kids. But those white teachers weren't as passionate about teaching our kids as the black teachers were that we had during the 60s and during the 50s and the 60s. Our teachers were passionate. They made us learn. They didn't ask us to learn. They made us learn. And we wanted to learn because we wanted to get out of that situation that we were in, and we wanted to make life better for us so that we can make something better for our kids.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and I have to agree with you 100% about that. You graduated in 1970, and they threw me out in 72 in Jacksonville. But some kind of way, me and you hooked up tonight.
There you go. And
so it's,
you know,
all right.
It's all, hey, life is, as I say, if you keep on living, you're going to learn.
There you go. Now, what about the integration aspect? How beneficial or how damaging was that?
Well, the book is still being written. I think, you know, that's been 40 years, 40 plus years now, and the book is still being written. But I think one thing that I've seen, and I think it all falls back on the parents. I think that you know, my kids got a great education, but it was only because I made them get a great education. I wasn't going to allow them to settle. When our kids came home from school, they had to put those report cards on the refrigerator because it was either going to be embarrassing or they were going to be happy about what was on those report cards. But if you were embarrassed, then you're going to go back and do better the next time. If you were happy, you know, you were going to try to stay happy. And All our kids were different, and we treated each one of them different. Each one of them wasn't an A student, but we told them to strive to be an A student. But I would always encourage them to just be the best that you can be, doing the best that you can in school. As long as you tried, and I know that you, did your best. You know your kids. Parents know their kids. They know what they can do and what they can't do. You know, so you encourage your kids all the time to do the best that they can do. Now, once they've done that, then you find avenues to encourage them to, and directions where they can be successful. You know, each one of our kids, and we have three daughters, and each one of them is in a different area of life and a different type of career. But they're all successful in doing what they do because they're following their passion, and that's what we led them to. You know, we provided them with the best education that we could afford, even if it meant not going to public schools and having to put them in private schools. But we wanted them to have a public school experience from the aspect of that's where both of us went through public schools, and we didn't turn out too bad. We just had to excel a little bit more when we got to college.
That's correct. Well, I tell you what, Larry, you've been rolling with it, and I know you told me that you're going to give me an hour. And I think you got a lot more to say. And if you ain't busy, you hang around, but I would like for us to take a little break.
I'll hang around a few more minutes with you, brother.
Okay. All right. Well, is it anything else that you think that we need to know? Because, see, when I come down there to First Thursday, I'm coming down there with a plan in my hand.
Okay.
And we go.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do, and again, we've covered a lot, but the things that I like about First Thursday is the interaction. I like the people,
mm-hmm.
and I just love people, period, and I love our people more. But I love people, period, and I like to have that opportunity to, you know, give my testimony. But I also like to hear other people's testimony. I like to hear what people have a passion about and why they're there, what they want to do with their lives, and how they plan to do it. And we always make ourselves available to listen and try and understand why someone wants to do something. One of the things I don't do and will never do is try to encourage people to do something that they're not capable of doing. I like to help people start businesses, and I ask them if they want to be a business owner, whether they want to be an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is different than a business owner. A business owner is someone who's going into business. That's something that they want to do and try to build that up for something for the rest of their lives and pass on as a legacy. An entrepreneur is building up a business so that they can make a profit right away or as soon as possible and build that business up in 2 to 3, 4 years. They want to sell it when it's at its peak and then start another business, or in the process of as they're building that entrepreneurship, that once it reaches its peak, they expand into different areas. You don't keep building on that same brand because brands wear out. You know, advertising has only take you so far. After a point, people get tired of listening to it. If you ever played sports, you know that a coach that's been around and for years and years, as that team matures, you know, the team thinks they understand what the coach is going to say before the coach says it, so they start tuning you out. And that's the same thing with people as far as marketing is concerned. You keep sending the same message over and over. Pretty soon that message wears out. You got to be creative enough to come back with a fresh message every 6 months, every year at least, changing that message to something else. We've gone, as First Thursday, I guarantee you, we've had 10 or more different slogans as far as what First Thursday is about. But First Thursday is about something different to us each and every year, each and every 6 months, because we need to keep our members listening to what we're saying, because we may say the same thing, we just say it in a different way. So marketing and branding are key components to a successful business. As an entrepreneur, I would set up businesses that, such as a franchise. I'd go into a franchise, build it up, and it reaches its peak, I'd sell it and buy two more franchises of a different brand, build those up. Because once you have a formula that works, it always works. It doesn't matter what type of business it is. If you have a formula that works, it'll work with anything.
Okay, well, fantastic. Well, now it's time for the contact information. How can we get a hold of you one more time?
Okay. You can always reach me at through the website, just, and it's www First Thursday, Jacksonville. Spell all the words out, and you won't have any problem. Matter of fact, we spent a lot of money building up that site so that we're high on the SEO. So if you type in First Thursday, you'll probably get a lot of different things. But if you type in First Thursday, Jacksonville, we should be right at the top. If you want to talk about, if you're Googling it, just Google First Thursday, Jacksonville. We should pop up there. But they can also, anyone that wants to reach me in any city, any time, they can always reach me through our mobile number. That's our parent company number is 206-280-9941. If you're in Jacksonville, you can reach us at 904-374-9313. And you can reach us in Jacksonville at info, at firstthursdayjacksonville.org. And that's the same thing with the website. It's firstthursdayjacksonville.org. And you can go there and you can learn about us, why we start the organization, who our board members are, and all those type of things. It's about us. And if you want to become a member or become a member, a part of the Black Business Director, the National Black Business Director, which is called I Like Black Business. That's not First Thursday Business. That's one of our partners out of the Northwest who we partner with to help promote and market and brand that identity. So it's ilikeblackbusiness.org. You can reach us there. And so anyways, those are the ways that you can reach us. If you have any questions, again, give us a call. Go to the website. You can find us, the information. All the contact information is on our website, www.firstthursdayjacksonville.org. If you want to see what we're doing in Seattle, there's a on the Jacksonville website, there's a First Thursday button there. Just click it, First Thursday Seattle. It'll take you to the First Thursday Seattle web page. We try to be as make ourselves as available as possible. If you're on the Facebook, it's First Thursday Jax, First Thursday J-A-X. Like us and friend us there. And same thing on Twitter and at FTS dot or something dot com. There you go. And we're on LinkedIn. If you want to reach us there, just Google Larry Williams. I mean, when you go there, just try to connect with W. Larry Williams, and I'm very popular. We have over 1,500 connections on there. We're over almost 2,500 on Facebook, and our website, again, you know, through our networks and email blast lists, we reach over 7,500 businesses and organizations and professionals on a daily basis. So if you want to reach those consumers that have businesses or professionals, follow First Thursday. That's the way to go.
Well, all right. Well, Larry, I certainly appreciate you being here on the broadcast, and we got it out. We're going to be further promoting the broadcast even after the show is over, and I thank you so much for being here. And I'm going
well, thank
to
you for having me, and thank you for inviting me. I want to give a shout-out to my friend, Minister W.D. up there in Seattle. He's one of my Patterson, W.D. Minister Patterson is a longtime friend of mine from Seattle. He connected you and I together, so I know he's a good man. And he's a member first up in Seattle. He always helps out when he can and does whatever he can. He promised me a meal up at the, he works for the Space Needle in Seattle, so he promised me a meal when I get back there. So I'm going to make sure I take him up on that, and we'll have a steak on you.
No, you're not on me, because I'm going to be right there to the table with y'all. You're a friend of mine, too. I'm going to be eating right there with you. Larry, I thank you for calling in, man. I'm going to let one of my brothers, this brother here, used to live on the next street from us. And
okay.
He went on to join a group. And I'm going to play a tune from this group. And I thank you for being in here. The name of the group is the Commodores. And,
all right, one of my favorites.
Okay. Well, thank you, and we're going out on that.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for having me. I look forward to seeing you at First Thursday and on September 4th. Remember, it's at the Jacksonville Urban League, and it's at noon. Come and be prepared to have a good time and gain some valuable information.
All right. Well, I would definitely be there. Take care of yourself,
okay,
brother.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot, bro.
You're welcome.
America is born at dead zero, and he has to now compete with a white child who has 87% what he needs to succeed. And I hear people saying, well, the black child, y'all just not doing it right. That's why our white kids are out achieving. No, it's because he got everything he needs. You don't have anything. That's why he's out achieving you. That's why you go drive around this city, any other city, and look at all the big skyscrapers, the big tall buildings. You go across America, and if you find five blacks in the United States that own a building with more than three stories, you're lucky. You don't own and control anything. Where are your airplanes and ships and boats? Where are your industries? You don't manufacture anything. All you're doing is consuming. We are 100% consumers and zero producers in the most capitalistic society on earth. And we have failed to understand because of our marketing people have not told us the truth. Our promoters have not told us the truth, that in a capitalistic society, there is no such thing as consumer power. Consumer power does not exist. You cannot have consumer power in a capitalist society. The only person that has the power is he who is producing has the power. Therefore, you have producing power. You don't have any consumer power. Consumerism is a weakness. Consumerism comes from the word to consume. Consume means to be eaten up, to be eradicated, to be eliminated, to be erased. And prior to the 1950s in this country, when a black person got tuberculosis, you said he had consumption, which means he's being eaten alive by the disease. And here we are bragging about our consumer power. Go look at all the black magazines bragging about black consumer power. We don't have any consumer power. That's a weakness. We should be talking, that's like going into a black neighborhood and having a crack addict bragging about how much crack he consumes. And he's got crack power. It's the addict that's selling him the crack that's got the power. I mean, the drug dealer. It's the drug dealer who's producing the drugs and selling to him. He's the one that has the power. But we never seem to can get it right. And so we live in a society where we don't understand what the game we're playing in, and we're losing. We don't understand the game because we haven't been taught the game. We don't even understand something simple like racism. I keep telling black folk what racism is. I go around the world and I ask blacks in various countries. I said, two people, stand up any place in the room, I'll give you $1,000 if you can tell me what racism is. I've never, ever had one that knew what racism was. Never had one. I said, what is racism? He said, well, it's bigotry. It's hatred. It's not getting along with people. It's bias. It's discrimination. All that wrong. Racism has nothing to do with getting along with people and liking people. Racism is a competitive relationship between groups of people who are competing for the ownership and control of resources, wealth, and power. That's what racism is. Racism never existed on the earth until the 1500s, when all of a sudden 9 European nations decided to use black labor, black bodies, and black wealth out of Africa to get in a race. After Columbus had discovered America, supposedly, in quotes, in 1495, all of a sudden they're going to rush to redevelop the Western world. So all these countries were in a race, a contest, competing to see who can develop North America, Central America, and Latin America. It was a race. It was a race, and everybody was in the race but black folk. Black folk never participated in the race. You were the prize, the loot that they used to empower themselves. See, they were buying blacks in Africa on a typical for $15 to $20 a piece. And they established a thing called a profit margin, 15% return on investment. 1,500% return. So they were selling for $400 and $500. They got into the United States and to other countries. And that's why the whole banking system started off of slavery in Portugal. Again, and the whole system of capitalism started off of black slavery. Before that was mercantilism. The whole concept that you all are playing in with promotions and what's called marketing development came out of black slavery. And it was designed not for you to profit, but for others to profit. Everybody was profiting initially except you, and it has not changed. And so when I look at your program, and it says that you are marketing developers. I would say marketing means going into any environment, a site, a geographical area, and promoting a product or a service or a good to get an equal value for it. You're marketing. But it also stipulates in there that to be a marketer, you must have a market. So I ask black folk, where are your markets? Where are your markets? Where is the black market? And they said, well, Dr. Ellis, we got a black market. Where is it? They said, well, it's all over the United States. And that's how much you get. Well, we got a $650 billion black market. And that's a lot of money. Wrong is not. It is not a lot of money. It's only a lot of money when it's aggregated. Scattered through the integration process, your money is nothing. It is chump change. Because we don't plan to have power. That's why we continue to integrate and scatter our money. And then brag about how much money we got. And then we come up with magazines and research to tell everybody where to go get our money and how to get it. Nobody else is that foolish but us. You got to have a license to be that stupid to do those kind of games. You don't tell people how to come into your market and how to sell to your people and take your money and your economy out. That's called a capital drain. When I was Assistant Secretary in Commerce, I took trade missions around the world. Nobody would allow that to happen in their country. We would not let the Japanese come over here and do dumpings. Dump their automobiles in Norfolk and in Jacksonville, Florida. That's called dumping, which means you come over and take the wealth out of our nation and doesn't take anything back to Japan. When they come over and dump their steel from Korea, we had a balance of trade policy, so you can't do this. Everybody has a balance of trade policy except black folk. We'll let anybody come in and do anything for us because we haven't changed the slavery. We still don't understand the process. Every day, Burger King's and McDonald's trucks will come into a black neighborhood and dump hamburgers, Coca-Cola, and take nothing out. That's a balance of trade deficit. This country right now is suffering from a balance of trade because we've allowed it to happen since Bush has been in office. And that's why you cannot profit in the society, because you got a capital drain. Nobody's ever taught black folk how to practice group economics. Your money is supposed to stay in your own country or in your own community and with your own hands and your own people and bounce at least 8 to 12 times. But we are the only people that absolutely refuse to do it. We won't do it. As a matter of fact, we are against spending money with our own people. And we're in that condition because meritorious manumission taught us in 1710 that a policy was set up in the Virginia colony and then also later into South Carolina called meritorious manumission. Meritorious means to earn. Manumission means to release. So a black could earn his release from slavery if he did one of four things, or a combination, elaboration, or sophistication of those four things. One, if he could prove to whites that he could see things through the eyes of a white person, and he'd prove it by one, saving a white person's life; two, saving a white person's property; three, inventing something or improving the profits that he get from picking cotton and corn or tobacco; or four, if he would squeal on and tell on any other black person who was trying to escape from slavery. That was called meritorious manumission. We still got blacks in America that's working hard and diligently to get meritorious manumission. They're working hard to make sure that they protect a white person's property. I don't care, and they protect it by any time you come out with an affirmative action program. I have the dubious honor of being the person who wrote that first affirmative action plan for the state of Florida in 1971 that went all over the country, a comprehensive plan. I didn't write the plan for minorities, poor folk, Asians, Hispanics, Arabs, midgets, humpbacks, lesbians. I wrote it for black folk. But immediately the whole frame of reference is the way you keep black folk down is always to loot and water something and make pretend it's for everybody. And that way anything for everybody is for nobody. And so they took that minority program, the affirmative action program, made it a minority program. And see, now I want the affirmative action program to die for that reason. In 1999, I go down to Texas, and a program is written for black folk. I look at the amount of money in state contracts in Texas that year, and white women got 78%. And nobody in our black leadership, in our black overclass, in the black civil rights movement ever said, hold a second, how are you going to put white women into a minority, into an affirmative action program set up for black folk when she was right along with the white man? She co-owned, co-controlled, co-influenced, co-inherited, and everything that the white slave owner had, she had it too. She sat in the same house, under the same table, slept in the same bed and raised his kids. How is she entitled to be competitive with black men or black people in the society? But our black leadership didn't say anything, so white women went into the affirmative action program and took it over and dominated. That's why you go to check Coca-Cola about 3 years ago. Coca-Cola Company, almost 66% of all the money on the minority program went to white women. And in Texas, white women got 78%, and Hispanics got 21%, and blacks got 0.9%. Because, again, we don't know how to play the game. We keep buying into these myths about these very broad, ambiguous groupings. And all of that stuff started immediately after the Civil War. See, the Civil War, what they never tell you, and when I'm coming to a point on this with immigration, that in 1865, the first civil rights law was written strictly and solely for black folk to reverse the Dred Scott decision, which says black people don't have any rights that anybody's bound to respect. So they wrote the Civil Rights Law of 1865 strictly and solely for black people. And Andrew Johnson vetoed it. And they came right back, a few liberal whites, and they wrote the 1866 Civil Rights Law. Again, said it's strictly for black folk. And the Civil Rights Law had nothing in the world to do what you talk about today about civil rights. That Civil Rights Law was written for three things, and Congressman Benjamin Hatch and Charles Sumner and Thaddeus Stevens, and what they said is this, that there's only two things that the black person could ever be in America. You're either going to be slaves or you're going to be free. But you will always be a slave in America unless the black person receives minimally 40 acres, a mule, and $100. And you never got it. Because so that tells you where you are now. Nothing has changed for you. And so in 1868, they passed the 14th Amendment. It says, well, at least if you're not going to give black folks something, you need to protect black folks' rights. And the law then said it is mandated upon all levels of government to use all necessary means to lift the badges and incidents of slavery off the shoulders of black folk. Nobody has done it. That is a law. And at that time, the civil rights law said if you don't do it and you're in government, you go straight to jail. White or black. Nobody has carried out those civil rights laws to the present time that were written for black folk. The 14th Amendment says that black folk must be treated in a manner similar to the way whites are treated under equal circumstances, similar circumstances. And in 1873, some whites from New Orleans went to file a lawsuit to use the 14th Amendment in the slaughterhouse case about the meat packers out in New Orleans. And in 1873, the United States Supreme Court came back and says whites cannot use those civil rights laws and cannot use the 14th Amendment because it's written strictly and solely to protect the rights and the freedoms of black people, people of African descent in America. When they said that in 1873, immediately the whole country exploded. And then the executive branch, the government, the judiciary with the courts, and the Congress got together and says, we got to end this right now. Because if black folk get smart and started using the civil rights laws and started using the 14th Amendment and started looking out strictly for themselves, they can be self-sufficient and competitive as a people. And they say, what we got to do now is to broaden and whiten those laws and pretend those laws were written for everybody. And if they're written for everybody, then black folk can't use them. See, that's how Barkey came up in 1968 and used the 14th Amendment. And the medical school exam say that it was a reverse discrimination against him. That's why you see all these reverse discrimination court suits all over the country, because black folk now have walked away from their rights. You see, anytime you want to be a minority, a poor person, or people of color, or diversity, multicultural, you walked away from your rights. You're not entitled to any benefits. You cannot justify having an affirmative action program, having a Black History Month, having reparations for black folk if you're using those very broad terms. Because the minute you say you are people of color or you're a minority or you're diverse, what you're saying, there's no difference in the treatment of a black person in this country than an Eskimo or a Filipino just came in last week. And if there's no difference, then how are you going to demand something special or exception? How are you going to demand having a special week for black history? How are you going to demand to have reparations and affirmative action? When you go into the marketplace as a developer, promoter, you are not entitled to anything because you keep using the terms that says you're not anything different from anyone else. If your company is talking about diversity and multicultural and the more minorities, you cannot justify going into the black community and looking for black consumers or having black dollars specifically set aside for black folk. You just wiped out your whole history, all the history and the mistreatment and the slavery of your own people and ancestors by saying, I'm a minority, and if I'm a minority, I'm no different from anyone else. And so my people have never learned how to play the game. They keep going into the marketplace in a very broad, ambiguous terms, the concept that was used after the Civil War. And that's why we now keep talking about minorities. And so now we got a major problem in society that's going to wipe us out, immigrants coming into society. Because in 1970, for the first time, after the Civil Rights Movement was over, and there were some benefits coming to the table for black folk, those other groups figured it out. They figured out what my people hadn't figured out. See, because up to 1970, all the Arabs in this country, all the Hispanics in this country, they had, and then Asians in this country, they had been living with, marrying, and going to school with whites. On their driver's license, their immigration papers, they were classified as whites. But after the Civil Rights Act in 1970 and all these benefits for affirmative action came to the table, they said all we got to do is to break away from the people we've been getting benefits from and go against black folk. Now all these immigrants are coming out. They started in the 1970 census. They're now competing against black folk for resources. And they're going to wipe you out. Your leadership will not support you. They're all supporting more immigrants coming into the country. They're down on the border saying, y'all, come on. Come on. And they don't understand. Let me give you a couple of points to them, and I'm going to give you some strategies we're going to have to start using. They don't understand that for every 10% increase in immigrants into this country, the people that are hurt are primarily black folk. White corporations benefit, black folks suffer. For every 10% increase in immigrants in this country, black people lose 0.3% of their income. I'm going to give it to you again. For every 10% increase in immigrants coming into this country, it's been going on throughout society for over 100 years, black folk lose 0.3% of their income. Now, since 1970 alone in this country, when I just told you, when all of a sudden these groups broke out, they figure they can go to the United States now and get all kind of benefits. All they got to do is put one foot on the shore of America, and they're now entitled, they're now equal to black folk. They're equal to 400 years of suffering by black folk by just putting one foot in the United States. They're now entitled to go into affirmative action programs, get Social Security benefits, and get a free education and everything else. So since 1970 until the present time, the immigrants in this country have gone up over 400%. Now, if you multiply 400 times 0.3, it comes out to be 12%. Now, what's the impact of that? You go back and look at your census. You find out in 1950 when the civil rights movement started, and it started over this issue that black folk were being underpaid. At that time in 1950, a typical white person in the United States was making $1. A black person was making 54 cents. That meant that a black person with a college education could not make as much as a white high school dropout. So a black person earned 54 cents to every dollar the white was earning. Now, because of the civil rights movement, black folk then got some new opportunities going into government jobs and some white corporations. So our income went up during the 60s from 54 cents up to 66 cents against a white dollar. By 1976, we went back from 66 cents back to 54 cents where we are now. Your entire civil rights gains in income was wiped out by immigrants coming into the country. Nobody's going to tell you that, but we're going to tell you through our think tank. Your whole income has been wiped out, and now the gap between the wealthy and this country is widening. The poverty rate is increasing, and most damagingly on blacks. So not only have you lost your income during the civil rights movement, let me show you what you lost. The number of people coming into the country, just black folk during that time, were struggling for voters' rights. They were being shot, lynched, whipped, and beaten, and bummed all through the South just for the right to go to the polls and vote. You just lost your voting power in this country. The immigrants wiped out your voting power. Your whole civil rights movement was a waste of time now, and those deaths were useless, futile. When in 1970, we outnumbered Hispanics, as an example, 2-1. They have now caught you and passed you. I predicted that in my first book, Black Labor, White Wealth. They'll catch you in the year 2000. They caught you exactly in the year 2000, right on the money. They now got 42 million in the country. You got 36 million. They can now outvote you on anything they want and block you on anything you want in the country. Now we got 14 to 20 million immigrants floating around this country, undocumented illegals, that the Congress is planning on giving amnesty to because white corporations want the cheap labor. Black folk are an obsolete labor class. They want some new labor. And so what they're going to do now is give them amnesty to 14 to 20 million. You add that 14 to 20 million to the 42 million you already got. That takes them up to almost 60 million Hispanics then in the country. Now, based on the 1986 immigration law, they then got a right to bring in their spouses, their children, and their parents. And we estimate that they'll bring in another 35 million Hispanics. They will then have 90 million to your 36. They will outnumber you 3-1 within 10 years. If you couldn't outvote whites, you haven't got a snowball's chance of outvoting Hispanics alone. Your vote was neutralized a long time ago. When I was running political campaigns for president back in 84 and for Carter in 76, and I ran in Atlanta, Georgia in 88, and again for Clinton's deputy political strategy in 92, I knew then that the black vote was gone and dead. See, whites alone outnumber you 8-1. That means eight will go over one at least eight times with nothing left over. Your vote is only important in the power economics principle when you vote as a majority. You must be the majority population. You cannot integrate and get economic power. You cannot integrate and get voting power. You must always try to figure out how to come together and aggregate to get your power. If you don't come together and become the majority population, your vote means nothing. If I throw a rabbit into a pen with 800 bulldogs, the rabbit can vote all he wants about what they're going to have for dinner.
Okay, Moore's, we're back. Let's take a look at some things here. We want to understand if we're going to do some things, we're going to have to understand some things. You build a castle one brick at a time. We have rural areas. We have vacant lots and stuff. And the bottom line is food, air, and water. So we'll start with the food and the water and what you can do in order to survive what is coming inside the United States. Is we're going to say that we're going to do, we'll say, Northside Farms. Okay. Step one, the first thing that we want to do is we want to mark our territory. That's step one. That's got to be done first. If you have ever seen stray dogs that walk through your neighborhood, what that dog will do is he will come out, you've never seen him before, you smell around in that area, and he would TT on that spot. And then he'd go down a little further, and he'll smell that little area there. What he's doing is he is marking his territory. Okay. And nature has given us this information, and a lot of us have not paid attention to that. If I was going to take over a neighborhood where I reside, the first thing I would do is I would mark the neighborhood, mark my territory. I would put up signs just like any business would do when they're breaking ground for coming attractions. You might have Walmart, Eckerd's, CVS, Wiggly's store. What they would do is they would put up a sign that they are coming to this area. Okay, when you mark the territory, now you are officially ready to begin the groundwork inside that space where it is. You don't need nothing but a block or two. If you got a block, you can walk down that block, just one block square. You can walk down that block and you can see houses that are vacant. You can see vacant lots where houses are moved, and all these things are available to you. Okay, and you can go around that entire block, and you can count the amount of spaces on land that are available to you, because you're going to cultivate these spaces, and you're going to grow in these spaces. But phase two is the first thing that we need to be concerned about. The second thing that you need to do after you have marked your territory, step two is to go throughout the entire community, the whole block that you plan to apprehend and build on, is everybody in that immediate circle is to be put on notice of your plans, how they can profit, what they can profit, when they can profit, where they can profit, why they can profit, and who says they can profit. And you want to list this through benefits to be gained and losses to be avoided. Because what you are looking for at this point, now that you have decided by marking the spot where you are going to grow, is you're going to need group participation. So we're going to include everybody in that immediate one square block satellite as a participant in what we got going. Now, what can they profit? Why should I sign your petition or agree to be involved in something that you got going on? Well, my first answer to that question is we're going to grow our own food, but this food will be free from pesticides. This food will be nourishing. This food will be free. You understand? Okay. The next thing, if you have children or if you have grandchildren, your grandchildren can participate in that by being involved in the growing process. They may have cutting yard, lawns. They may have ideas about a beauty salon, hair products or whatever. And we're going to aid them in that creation and that system. Now, for instance, if you have a sister, she may have no husband, but she's in the satellite. She's within the confines of where the territory that you have marked, and she may have two sons. She may have more than two sons, but we can take these sons and we can get them to take certain blocks and be responsible for cutting the yards and trimming the hedges. They are self-employed within that satellite. And they are to be paid. We want residents to pay them, but part of the income that they're being paid is to be put into a community fund, because this is all-inclusive. Everybody in the satellite benefits. Okay, so we've employed the children, and you can deal with that from different angles, but the basic premise of self-employment for the children is fine. Now we got transportation to consider, because we got the elderly in the community. We got the bus that's running through the community, and we can take the men, because there are men located in there that don't have anything to do. So these brothers, and they may have cars and trucks and what have you, these brothers, they can take up the responsibility of taking the elderly to their appointments in return, and we can pay them out of the community fund. People running for politics and offices and stuff of this nature, before they can come in there and put their signs down and ask for somebody to vote for them, the first thing they have to do is they have to meet with the community leaders. The community leaders comprise the people who come up with the initial plan, the actual people who are living in the community that's going to benefit and going to profit from it. These are the people that will make the decisions about the political aspect of it. Now, you may have stores in your community that are occupied by somebody that don't look like you. You're taking your money to and giving your money, and you're being treated any kind of way. You're not employed in these businesses, and you are, whether you're employed or not, you have somebody in your community that don't look like you. And when they leave after gathering all your money, they take it out of your community. We want to turn that around and make sure the money stays inside the community. So therefore, what we will institute is called a boycott. If there's no money coming in long enough, they have no choice but to vacate the premises. Once they vacate the premises, now we can officially go in and take up shop, and we can start having our fruit and vegetable stands in there. We can have our beauty salons there. We can have this, that, and the other. All these things can be added into that area. We can take that out because this is a predominantly marked territory, and we are taking over this territory. Now, let's deal with security, because we're at the point now where we have these neighborhoods, we have women. The women are not able to, they're afraid to walk the streets at night. Their children can't walk the streets at night. We got drugs. We got all this stuff. Now we have the men that's going to come in, and they're going to volunteer their time to patrol your satellite. If you got a car, if you got a truck, you got a motorcycle, you got on foot, or whatever we got to do, the only thing that we need is walkie-talkies. That's cheap. We got walkie-talkies. We can, you know, somebody come up over there and they say, well, I'm coming to see so-and-so. Well, who are you? Let us call them and find out if they are expecting you. There will be no drugs sold down up in here because we run this. We don't need the police because the men have taken responsibility for the satellite. So we can detach from 911. We got the brothers that can take anybody anywhere they need to go or whatever. We can keep the emergency vehicles that will come in and bring out, but we do not need anybody in coming up in here with guns to dictate any policy about how you're supposed to act because the men in that satellite have taken responsibility for this community. Now, obvious to the whole world, because we done marked the territory, we got signs up clearly marking this territory, and the men and women and children are responsible for this particular area. Okay? Now, we can start growing the food, and if we're growing the food, and being that everybody in the satellite is going to benefit from the satellite, therefore, everybody will protect the satellite. You don't have to worry about that because they're benefited from it, you see. And then you can go on to the next phase. You can set up your hydroponics and aquaponics systems where you can grow food, your vegetation, and you can set up a system where the vegetation can be fed by the natural fertilizers of fish that you have connected to that. I would like to recommend that you go and type in hydroponics and aquaponics into, type it into YouTube, and you can see how this thing is being done. And you can create this type of system for yourself. And now that you have this going on, you got organic fruits and vegetables, you got organic fish, you can take and set up on these vacant lots and stuff. Now the markets are calling you. The stores are calling you. Walmart, they want to come over and get your vegetables. They want to pay you for this. This is all money coming into your satellite. And you can take this money and you can reinvest over and over again in your satellite, and then you can begin to expand. We can go to the next block. We can go to the next block after that. And now we have the entire east side of town. We have the entire north side of town. We have the entire west side of town doing the right thing with cooperation and group participation and group control of economics and group control of the dollar. And a dollar can turn over and over and over within the confines of that community. Now, this is the formula for how to get it done. And you can do this thing. A lot of us might say, well, what about water and plumbing and stuff? Hey, man, let me tell you something. You can go and get equipment, or you can create your own equipment to extract water from the ground to create and have self-sustaining water for yourself. And if anybody got a problem with it, you can go against them as a what? As an entire group. You can create policy. You make policy. You ain't violating nothing. You're doing what you're supposed to do, and you're taking responsibility for yourself. And these are the things that we need to consider doing when we are talking about business. One thing that we have to understand about the word business is this. Family equals business. We'll say that again. Family equals business. You don't have a family on one side of town, my brother on another side of town, my sister out of town. That ain't business. Everybody come together collectively. You belong to church organizations, fraternal organizations and stuff. We're going to have to unify collectively and put a dent in this thing and start doing this thing the right way. Step one, mark your territory. Step two, include the people in your satellite. Step three, include and employ the people right there where you are. Step four, if there's anybody in there that's taking money out of the community, they got to go. If they got buildings or if they got whole complexes, doesn't matter. When you're coming in there buying nothing else, you got to go. Okay. So all of the real estate in that satellite have to be purchased by you. That's one of the priorities that you have to do. You're going to have to purchase the real estate. You may deem that, okay, this house here is destroyed. You know, we can't move nobody in there. We can't rent nobody in there. Tear it down. Take it out of the way. Take the land. Put something on the land. Set up your stuff on the land. Increase productivity. You don't have to worry about a market for it. If you're growing organic fruits and vegetables, you got the hydroponics going, fish markets calling you all across the United States, they need your fish because your fish don't have no chemicals. Your fruits and vegetables don't have no chemicals. We got to worry about no noise. We don't have to worry about no drug dealers, because in order for the drug dealers to get up in there, they got to tell 25 or 30 men why they're there. If a sister want to leave out the house and walk up and down the street or sit out on their front porch until 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, they can do it. They got patrols up and down the road on car, truck, motorcycle, and their own foot, and everybody is dealing with this thing on a 24-hour basis. Think about what I'm saying. You're going to have to do this in order to survive. You're going to have to deal with the basic sustenance of life, food and water. In the beginning, we was created and put in a garden. The Creator brought the animals to us to see what he called them. He ain't said nothing about lunch.
Now, why African-American-owned businesses are still a rarity in many neighborhoods, including minority communities. News Hour economics correspondent Paul Salmon has been exploring that question, part of his ongoing reporting, Making Sense of Financial News.
Maggie Anderson, her two daughters, her husband John. Nice suburban Chicago neighborhood, upscale house, upscale life. And yet these successful business professionals with brand name MBAs felt guilty for years.
We thought we should be doing more, and we thought we should be doing stuff with the money that we made.
Things like what?
Make sure that whatever we do, it was with a black company, through a black family company, buy a product made from a black company, use black professionals, shop in black communities.
And thus, the empowerment experiment, chronicled in the recent book, Our Black Year, buying strictly from black-owned businesses for 12 whole months. Starting out, the Andersons expected some problems shopping only at black-owned stores.
They'd be smaller. Selection not as great. Prices a little higher. Maybe have to drive a little bit. We assumed there'd be probably about 20 dry cleaners that we could choose from, you know, just in black pockets, not in Oak Park, where we live.
What they found? One black-owned dry cleaner in all of the Chicago area.
Hey, how you doing, Maggie?
About 2.5 miles from home in a mostly African-American West Side neighborhood.
Years ago, it used to be a lot of black-owned businesses around, and, you know, funding just went down, and things just went kind of kaput after that, and it just, the black-owned businesses just seemed to leave the area.
So how did you survive?
I've been in this location for about 4 years, and before then, my uncle owned this place for 20 years. And most of my survival came from contract business, you know, where we couldn't, you know, get the money from the neighborhood or people come in and patronize the businesses in the neighborhood, you know, due to the lack of jobs, you know, we had to revert to contract businesses.
So that explains all those Army camouflage shirts or whatever it was.
That's the ROTC uniforms for the City of Chicago Public Schools.
Most money spent by African-American consumers, even in their neighborhood shops, goes to non-black business owners who seldom invest in or hire from the local community, something the Andersons link directly to the 14% black unemployment rate and other economic inequities, and that they found the media failed ever to report.
Don't just say the black unemployment is four times that of whites. Say that black businesses only get 2% of the $1 trillion of black buying power. And then say that black businesses are the greatest private employer of black people. Then you might be able to say, wow, if there were more support of black businesses, if maybe a little more of that $1 trillion got to those businesses, unemployment wouldn't be so high.
They wanted to do something extreme enough that everyone, including their fellow members of the black upper middle class, would notice.
Most folks like us think that we are giving back to the community by living well. We're stereotype negators.
Is that true, that middle class black folk think that just being middle class or upper middle class is enough?
I do think that is a prevailing sentiment. There's almost a pride, for lack of a better word, in being able to kind of disassociate yourself in the African American mm-hmm. community from the lower economic echelons in the community.
It's not a lack of caring. It's not that we don't care about what's going on in the communities that we've, for the most part, left. It's that we don't see a target anymore. There's nothing to go after. So that was really the point of the experiment.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, the total was $12.
By month three, the Andersons had found their dry cleaner and a black-owned grocery store and a black-owned gas station 40 miles away, all located in largely black neighborhoods.
We found a cool way to get gas. We would send that gas station our money, and the gas station owner would send us a gift card, and he was part of the DP franchise. So we got gas, food, and a dry cleaner. Everything else, we were just desperate and hopeful that something would pop up. And in the third month, we got a general merchandise outlet, and in the fourth month, we finally found a place to buy clothes and shoes for our daughters.
In the meantime, they found a shop that described itself as a grocer, but fell somewhat short.
We thought it would be like kind of a small grocer where we can buy fresh meats and produce. There's nothing fresh in there, just canned goods, some frozen burritos, frozen pizza. So that was the first thing, like, wow, this place is terrible. And we and the people who live in this community have to put up with it.
Eventually, the Andersons found an actual full-service black-owned grocery store.
And there used to be lots of black grocers in America.
Thousands, nationally, yes.
And now?
In January of 2009, there was one black grocer in the entire state of Illinois. One, that was it.
The Andersons enlisted John's alma mater, the Kellogg Business School, to survey the whole country.
We used to have 6,400 in the 1930s. We had 19 full-service grocery stores at the turn of the century. Now, those researchers at Kellogg who helped us with our study, they could only find evidence of three black-owned full-service grocery stores in all of the United States of America.
So what happened to all those black-owned businesses? Competition from megastores like Star Market or Walmart is one answer. But a fuller answer may be integration, says Cornell economist Vicki Bogan.
Prior to desegregation, actually my parents are in that generation in which they weren't allowed to patronize certain kinds of restaurants. In that particular environment, if you were a black-owned restaurant, you were guaranteed a certain number of customers that didn't have any other option of eating in other establishments if they wanted to eat out.
John Anderson agrees, but adds one more troubling factor.
The white man's ice is colder.
Yeah. White man's ice is colder. What is it?
In the black community, there's a joke about how sometimes we feel like our goods and services are inferior. You know, like a psychosis, which is disturbing because I'm not aware that this exists in other ethnic communities.
It was the 1-2 punch of integration. Of course, integration was great, but economically, it had a deleterious impact on our community. The first punch was We were so happy to have the opportunity to shop at Woolworth and Sears that we felt like we were sticking it to somebody by going there. Hey, I'm going to spend all my money with you and show you that my money is just as green. Then the second punch was that those retailers started recruiting my husband and me. So when I'm coming up in the 70s, the big goal of any mama, any big mama, is for her daughter or her son to get a good job at a big white company. So our would-be entrepreneurs, our talented tents, as we call them in our community, we flocked to corporate America, and they got all our money, and they got all our talent.
If there isn't much disagreement over why the black community lost its retail jobs, there's plenty over what to do about it. Cornell's Bogan makes two points. First, the key need is for more capital to be generated by and invested in the black community.
Just on a day-to-day basis, black businesses generally don't have the same access to capital, financial capital, even human capital, that other types of businesses do.
But the second point is that buying black won't make much of a difference, even if you do find black retailers, says Professor Bogan.
Even if you confine yourself to just purchasing from black merchants, where are those black merchants going to get their products? In today's global economy, it's likely that their suppliers are not going to be African American. They might not even be American.
But one business the Andersons found certainly is, black-owned Covenant Bank, which also reinvests in the community. Board member Kim Jackson.
The percentage of dollars that go out of this community is far beyond most neighboring communities, and we definitely need to see that decreased. We can and have supported ourselves and sustained ourselves. We need to go back to that.
And Maggie Anderson's efforts do seem a step in that direction.
What percentage of your customers would you guess are, like Maggie Anderson, coming here specifically to patronize a black business?
I'd say maybe 10% of my customers. You know, because of Maggie.
So before Maggie came here and wrote about you, what percentage of your customer base was here to patronize a black business?
I would say before, maybe 1%.
The Anderson effect, making a small dent in inner city Chicago, which needs all the economic revitalization it can get.
Okay, Mose, we're back. Now, very, very interesting. Here's a man and his wife that had attempted to take what they had to go out in an effort to save, but that's not enough. What's going to happen is that what's going to need to happen is that's going to have to be done from an opposite direction. We're going to have to look at where we are now. For those of you who live in apartment complexes and stuff, you may not be in a neighborhood where there are houses and there's ground that you can grow through. But you can gain expertise and training right where you are by growing your own food. That's something that's totally inexpensive. You can plant the seeds, you can nurture them, and you can learn how to do this right. Now you have experience. You can get on the land and go anywhere you want to go, and your project will come out right if you're growing something. These are the people that we need. Now, as far as people who are in the so-called rural areas that have a block, you can take the block, but you got to abide by the formula. Step one, the first thing to do is mark your territory. You got to put up signs clearly showing what's coming, who's going to benefit. Step two, you got to go from house to house and explain what they're doing, because you're going to need the participation of everybody in that satellite. If you do something other than that and you try to proceed, you will end up with a garden and nothing else. That's what you will have. I'm telling you, you're going to have to create a system. You're going to have to put it on paper. You're going to have to be able to answer every question that's in the mind of everybody you talk to. And when you can show these people how they can benefit, what they can profit, where they can profit, why they can profit, when they can profit, who says they can profit, through benefits to be gained and losses to be avoided. You got a lot of single parents. They have resources. They have sons and daughters that are unemployed. They send them to school. They have hope that some kind of way that they're going to make it. But what they fail to realize is they have resources right where they are. All you got to do is get up in the morning, early in the morning, and walk around your square and take a look. The only thing that you're looking for is the vacant lot. You ain't got to worry about the neighbor around the corner that's raising hell and selling dope and all that. Look past that. You ain't even got to that yet. That's the easiest pie. But look at the resourceful areas that you have there. Because you're not acting alone. You're acting as a group. You're dealing with group economics. And it's time for the men and the women to take responsibility for where they standing at. You on the ground, you got your house, you're going out, buying security alarms, you got a dog, you got a fence, you got chains around there, you got guns, and all that right here. Okay, all that's good. Hold on to all of that right there. But let's try something different. Let's try responsibility, and let's take responsibility for where we are. Let's do something about our condition. And when you take responsibility and you start acting as a block, you know, you got yourself set up, you know, market territory. You got the participation of everybody in your initial groundbreaking. You growing your food, and everything is going good because people, they feel like they are part of what you're doing. You're not just growing stuff, and they see you come around every once in a while. It's beautiful and all that, but I don't feel like it. You know, you ain't said nothing to me about it. I ain't, you know, I'm just passing by. No, we don't need that. What we need is inclusion. We need association. We need group participation, okay? Because if you're not going at it that way, you will fail. You got to take the whole spot. You got to do it right, and you got to make sure that you are not alone. You got everybody else in there with you. This is just not something that you are doing by yourself. Now, the phone lines are open, 310-982-4184, 310-982-4184. If you got a question, a comment, go ahead and raise your hand. I will open up the phone line so you can get in, and you can tell me what you think about this thing, okay? All right? Now, these type of systems are cropping up all across the United States. People have realized what I've been talking about, and others, and urban geoponics, and all these brothers and sisters, and all over the United States. We've been doing this kind of stuff, but we need more people doing the same thing. You don't have to be living in fear in your neighborhood. You can shut it down, close it off. We don't need fences and chains and bars. All we need is for the people to take responsibility for their own livelihood. And if they do that, then we don't have to worry about it. Because, see, you know, back in the day, I remember when the houses that my grandmother and them lived in, these houses was almost connected. You had less than 2.5 feet space between these houses. And these sisters would sit on the porch. The sister next door would come out on her porch. My grandmama come on her porch. And they'd be all down the line, and they would talk to one another sitting right there on the porch all the way down the line. If it's anybody that they didn't know that came down that particular street, they would watch him like a hawk. He better not do nothing crazy. You understand what I'm saying? This was automatic group participation. They would talk about the soap operas or whatever, but everybody was sitting on that porch all the way down the line. If somebody strolled down up in there they didn't know about it, and we ain't never seen him, everybody was watching. They would call down the line, well, I ain't never seen him before. What did you think about him? I see him coming, baby. I got him. You know? So this is the same type of system that we're going to have to set up for survival of our people. Now, who I'm talking to, about people that look like me. That does not mean that I'm racist against people that don't look like me. I'm trying to talk to my people because my people come first. Everybody else comes second. We need to get ourselves together first. Here is a plan. This is a plan that you can use, and it's beneficial to you. And you, when you see it working, and I mean, I know by now you could imagine how wonderful it is. And you don't have to worry about it, because if you do this here, you can take over. We got the same type of stuff going on in what's called gated communities. When you go to a gated community, you have to stop at the security gate. It could be your mama living inside that complex, but you got to sign in. They're gonna have to take your ID. They're gonna have to check the number if they gave you this number voucher, whatever, to get in and to get out. Ain't no such thing as no riffraff coming down up in there, no drug dealers coming down in there unless they're being allowed to come in. And all that got to be checked. But you can create your own gated community without bars and chains if the men and women would take responsibility for their own house, their yard, their children, and their neighborhood. You can be organized, and you can do some things. And it's not hard. And if you're growing your own food, and you're growing your own fish, and everything is holistic, then you have an unbeatable market. You cannot imagine how many companies will be trying to get in your neighborhood to buy your product, because you got something that's marketable. You got something that everybody wants. All you got to do is just start right there where you're sitting. You're sitting right there in the house. You can walk out the door and sit on your front porch and just look around. You got acres of diamonds. You got everything that it would take for you to succeed right there in your ability. Now, one thing that I want to bring to the table is those of us who are burdened with debt, we want to get rid of that. You want to get bigger. That way that you have capital to invest. Okay? You want to remove that, get that out of the way.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amaniel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt.
Okay, now let's say that we're going to do this in our neighborhood. Let's get down to brass tacks. You have marked your territory. That's step one. Do not hope to do anything if you have not followed step one. If you have not followed step one, forget about it. You have not designated anything for control. You do not have the attention of anybody in the entire area. Step one, mark your territory. Just like any business would do. When you have a new Walmart, they have a sign up saying, coming attractions. You see the area over there where they plan to build and all that. Coming soon, Walmart. Aircuts, CVS, JCPenney's, whatever. Market territory. All right, now, the staff that you have or the people that you have that you're going to use as the initial people with the knowledge to set off the first product, to set off the first system whereby you're going to create a problem, a product that everybody can benefit from. These are the people that you will have with you when you go inside the neighborhood to knock on the door and talk to these people or get an appointment to come and see these people and sit down with them and tell them what you're about to do. You're not going by yourself. You have a group. You have an entourage. If you don't have an entourage and you are a man or a woman, you got your husband and you got your wife. If you come as a husband and wife team, that's an organization. Okay? You're ready to go now. And you can go to every house round down up in there. And I guarantee you, before you get to the end of circle, the word is already out on you. This man thing down there, he finna do this and that. Well, me personally, I don't think it got to work, but I'm going to look over here what he gave me. Make sure that you leave them with the plan. And inside the plan, you show them what they can profit, how they can profit, where they can profit, when they can profit, where they can profit, why they can profit, who says they can profit. And you want to do this through benefits to be gained and losses to be avoided. And you want to leave that with them with access to a number where they can call you and give you a yeah, no, or whatever, and you can talk to them until you get this thing worked out. But you don't waste no time with that because your intentions are noble. You don't have to worry about that. You want to answer all the questions, and any questions they may have that's not on the paper, you want to answer those too. You want to answer the questions about politics. You want to answer the questions about investments. You want to answer the questions about how can my children profit. You want to answer the questions about my son, my daughter. How can they benefit? It may not all iron out that way, but at least you got a plan to start, and you can ask the questions, and you can critique the situation until you get the participation of your satellite. You may not just have but one square block. You walk through the block, you might see 13 or 14 different vacant lots. On these vacant lots could be neighborhood gardens. You ain't got to worry about the people because what the people would do, if they are included, and they are going to benefit, they are going to help you because you have showed them how they can profit, how they can benefit from what you're attempting to do. This is how to take back your neighborhood by using the resources that's already there. We can utilize the most valuable asset that we have, and that is each other not a dollar bill, not silver and gold, but each other by being inclusive. Somebody want to come and put up a sign and start running for office and stuff and all this right here. Now you got to participate in the participation of the of your satellite. Hold on, baby, you can't put that down here. I'm gonna have to get back with the. We have a neighborhood committee, and you can come in to this neighborhood committee, and you can tell us what you are planning to do for this committee, provided we're going to give you our financial resources, but we need to know what you're going to do for us right here in this satellite. You know, we don't want to hear nothing about nut vague. We're talking about right here, because we're looking dead at you. Now, if you are willing to do that, then we will vote on it, and we will decide unanimously to allow you to come in here and put up your signs about you running for some kind of office or something. But we have what we have here. We have complete neighborhood participation, a satellite participation, community participation, and everybody has to be in agreement because we're all on the same page, and it ain't just one of us. It's a whole lot of us. And we all are on the same page because all of us stand to benefit. We stand to gain. Okay. Let's go to the next phase. Now, where we are now, we have in our neighborhoods, we have people in our neighborhoods with stores and stuff that we are giving our debt notes to. And these people are taking the debt notes and they are taking it out of the neighborhood and put it in their bank, and they are leaving the neighborhood and they are living scrumptiously in gated communities and everywhere else. They will not employ us. They are disrespectful toward us. And they are not putting any of the money that we give them back into the neighborhood. So there is nothing left for us to do but to take it and take control of it and create our own industry. We can have our own service stations. We can have our own franchises. We can have our own family stores. We can have our own hair and nail shops where everybody around the city comes down here where we at to get their nails done or their hair done or to get their body groceries. And everybody in the whole place look like us. And we're taking the money and we're circulating the money back to the neighborhood. Now, one thing that we have to understand about debt notes, we got a public and a private. And the only thing that we're supposed to do with debt notes is to be interchange or pass from each other. It's not supposed to be put in the public. We're supposed to be exchanging these debt notes between each other. Armed with knowledge concerning the private side, we're forced to be reckoned with. But when it comes to debt notes, we have to control the debt notes, and we control the debt notes by exchanging the debt notes between each other. I might be in your satellite. I might have a son and a daughter. My son, he want to participate. I go out and buy him a lawnmower. Give him 10 yards. Pay him for them 10 yards. I'll pay him, and I'll take a percentage of what he earned from the 10 yards, and I'll take it to the committee and put that contribution into the committee. We don't have to worry about what they're doing the money because we got it all on the books. Everybody get a financial statement. We know where the money at. But when it comes to decisions, okay, now it's time for everybody to come together. We got to hold a meeting. Barack Obama coming down. Okay, come talk to us. Let me, you know, we need to know what you're going to do about us. You have power when you begin to exercise your authority as a block. This is all a part of business, and I thought to bring this out so that you will understand how this thing goes. We have acres of diamonds right there in our own midst. All we got to do is get together and use what we got. That's how you do that. And the most valuable thing, and we're going to have to understand that we are moving toward basic sustenance, where we're going to have to feed our own selves. We're going to have to drink our own water. We're going to have to be able to survive regardless of what happens. You're going to have to be able to survive. And if you have no skills, then you cannot survive. We're going to take a little quick break. I'll be right back, okay?
During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanayel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanayel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, now we can go to the next phase. We got control of our satellite, which is it don't have to be nothing but one square block where you live. That's all. We ain't got to go all way, all over the whole, everywhere. We ain't got to do that. All we got to do, we can take one street, just one street. Just when you ain't even got to take the whole street and do that up in there, you'll be surprised at what you can accomplish, and you can spread out. But let's just say that we took one square block. That's all. These particular people that's living in this particular square block don't think like nobody else around that block. We can't, you know, in the world get out on you. No, you, man, you can't, man, you can't go down to, man, don't you, man, don't you see them signs? Man, don't you see them brothers down there? Man, okay, man, look here. You can't go down, man, I don't even go down up in there, man. You know, man, you'll be surprised at what you can do when you take responsibility for yourself. Police shootings and all of that, you know, all that. That's hot. That's hot. That's the end of that. It ain't happening down up in here. You know, we ain't having that. Now, we're going to have to provide educational systems. We're going to have to provide recognition for the people in the satellite. But it does not come without responsibility first. There are 1,001 questions that you may could ask. But if we got the nucleus of doing the right thing, then we can get on with answering the questions and critiquing and making what we already started better. But never coming to the conclusion that it won't work. Because it's working all over the United States. You got anywhere you see a gated community at. You got people inside the gated community that's not conforming to certain things. I can assure you, been there, seen that, done that. But they never seem to get outrageous because the rules of the community is established. Now, if they do get outrageous, they can be expelled from the community because you're going to have to look out for yourself. You're going to have to look out for your children, and you're going to have some space to do that with. Now, what I have mentioned to you this evening is very, very powerful, because we're talking about self-sustenance. We're talking about self-survival. We're talking about neighborhood industry, control of the dollar, protection, security, the whole ball of wax. That's what I'm talking about tonight. And this is all a part of business. Why? Because family is business. The first place that you ever supposed to go when you're talking about business is to your family. Tell your brothers and sisters. Tell your children. Every effort to try to get them to understand. Who knows? They may not understand. They may not want to be a part of it. But you don't throw them away. You do what you got to do. And when they see the light, you let them in. And you show them what the plan is. And show them what they got to, what they got to do. If they may have something to offer that you may not have thought of. But family is business. That's it. You know, you can, all you got to do is look at the mafia. the mafia will tell you family is business. Business is family. Family is business. Business is family. But what is interesting is you never see on a regular basis, you might have some little isolated incidents because it's stupid, but you never see a thing where the police is just doing the kind of stuff they're doing to people of African descent inside the United States. You don't see that because they are dealing with organization. They know, look, because, man, you mess around and no, don't go. You have partners abandoning partners and stuff. You know that, man. You shot Giuseppe. Boy, look at him. Oh, Lord. I'm getting out the car. You ain't finna get me killed. Because these people here, they got the formula. Family is business. Business is family. And when we understand these concepts and we keep trying to separate business from family, we can't do that. Business is family is business. And business is family. You just want to make sure that you have an extended family. If you're talking about taking over a satellite and just using it for an example, because we got these things all over the United States. They're growing up, they're cropping up, and you'd be surprised at what you will see. When you travel across the United States, you'll see a sign that says Sweetwater Gardens. And you go down up in there, and you find out that these people, they got control of the whole area down up in there. Everybody down there on the same page. You don't have to take my word for it. Check it out. Them people ain't by themselves. Them people organized. They got it, man, look at them. They got it going on. And you can do the same thing right where you at. A pack of seeds probably don't cost but a quarter. Or 35 cents. That's unheard of in today's economy. All you got to do is apply a little bit of thinking and a little bit of vision to what I'm talking about. And we're to that point now where we're going to have to survive. You're going to have to learn how to grow your own food. You're going to have to learn how to catch your own fish. You're going to have to learn how to shoot your own animals. And you're going to have to learn how to protect your women and children. You got to protect them. Those are your women. Those are your children. They're depending on you to be the man of the house. You're going to have to man up, take responsibility, take it. Take that bull by the horn and throw him down. You can't throw them down, get some help. But somebody going down. Just make sure it ain't you. But I wanted to bring this out as an added portion to what we're discussing here this evening about business. Because business goes further than we can understand. Your marketing skills, your education toward business and stuff. And in any, and I would suspect that in any major business course, they talk about the basic commodity items. They're talking about the basic sustenance of life. If they are a real bona fide business, and if they're not talking about these things, you're in the wrong area. You got the wrong program, because this is the bottom line. You know, everybody, you don't wait for something to happen. You make something happen, and now you use your own talents and your own resources to get done what you got to do. You know, I admire my mother. She's she got her garden going, and she got her grapefruit trees. She got her pecan trees. She got her grapes growing. She got her pears growing. She got it going on. She said, "Well, I want to." She got a grapevine going on. She said, "Well, I'm leaving something for my grandchildren and stuff. Y'all come on, y'all come over here. Y'all better come over here and help me. And I want to." That's my baby. You had to watch it though, cause boy, look at it. When she talking about getting stuff done, she would take a brother out, because you till the ground, you get. But she get the job done at the end of the day. She ain't playing by her babies, her grandchildren. And I don't see what no man should do anything less than that. And so that's all right. That's a true queen, a true princess, and whatever else you can call her. But that's my baby. And she get it done. She don't never, she deal with it. She do research. She get on. She look at it. You better not come in there talking about changing the channel from her gardening program. My baby got it going on. That's my baby. She have everything mapped out. She know how she want to do stuff. What fertilizer you supposed to put on there. I said, "Well, how you got all of this ready?" "I do my research. You just do what I say." I said, "All right, baby." I said, "All right." So I cannot mess with her. I got to give to her. That's a true soldier right there, and a queen in her own right. So me and my brother, he called me and said, "Well, you know, we have been summoned by your mother." I said, "Oh, what's going to happen now?" She said, "Well, we're supposed to be over there because it's time for the fall gardening." I said, "Okay." So we go over there, and we just went over there last week, and she damn near killed us. But we managed to survive. And we got the ground turned over. We got everything that she said that needed to be done, done. So that's done. And so you can do the same thing for yourself. And you want to, I wish you would consider some of what I have told you here this evening, because I'm from the old school. I can just only deal with stuff that I've been through that I know that work. And that's all I got. But anyway, we're coming down to the end of the broadcast. And I appreciate everybody that has been here to listen to this broadcast. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe, and y'all have a good evening, okay?